Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, March 27, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of the website at which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. You can also support us by purchasing the books Government by Consent and Court Access in the Common Law. You can find them on the right-hand side of our website. Also, please join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs, also found on the right-hand side of our website or on our front page. Okay, we're going to start off with our scripture reading, as we do every week. We're in the book of Ephesians, and we're in chapter 3, I believe. Yep, chapter 3. So we're in the book of Ephesians, chapter 3, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 3. For this cause, I, Paul, the prisoner of Jesus Christ for you Gentiles, if ye have heard of the dispensation of the grace of God which is given me to you ward, how that by revelation he made known unto me the mystery, as I wrote afore in few words, whereby when ye read ye may understand my knowledge in the mystery of Christ, which in other ages was not made known unto the sons of men, as it is now revealed unto his holy apostles and prophets by the Spirit, that the Gentiles should be fellow heirs and of the same body, and partakers of his promise in Christ by the gospel, whereof I was made a minister, according to the gift of the grace of God given unto me by the effectual working of his power. Unto me, who am less than the least of all saints, is this grace given, that I should preach among the Gentiles the unsearchable riches of Christ, and to make all men see what is the fellowship of the mystery which from the beginning of the world hath been hid in God, who created all things by Jesus Christ, to the intent that now unto the principalities and powers in heavenly places might be known by the church the manifold wisdom of God, according to the eternal purpose which he purposed in Christ Jesus our Lord, in whom we have boldness and access with confidence by the faith of him. Wherefore, I desire that ye faint not at my tribulations for you, which is your glory. For this cause I bow my knees unto the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, of whom the whole family in heaven and earth is named, that he would grant you, according to the riches of his glory, to be strengthened with might by his Spirit in the inner man, that Christ may dwell in your hearts by faith, that ye, being rooted and grounded in love, may be able to comprehend with all saints what is the breadth and length and depth and height, and to know the love of Christ, which passeth knowledge, that ye might be filled with all the fullness of God. Now unto him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us, unto him be glory in the church by Christ Jesus throughout all ages, world without end. Amen.
Okay. Well, before we get started, I just want to make a note here that I posted a new page. Goodness, I think it was early today. Maybe it was yesterday. I think it was yesterday, but I've added to it. It's under today's issues called Anarchy USA. It's been a long time since I've seen this video, And I watched it the other day, and I thought I should set up a page on this because I was watching some other videos by an individual, a couple of videos, actually, which I posted on this page. And it was basically how much communism has taken over in our nation. People don't realize how serious this is, or shall I say, how big this is. Our universities have all been taken over. You know, I'm sure there's some out there that haven't been, but generally speaking, you know, all of the riots, all of the problems, a lot of it starts with college-aged individuals. I remember back in the 60s when there was just riots after riots. That's what you saw on your TV all day long. I mean, constantly at the news. You know, news came on at, after 6 o'clock in the evening. And, you didn't have 24/7 news like we got today. You can get news everywhere and anywhere. But back then, came on at certain times. And 6 o'clock in the evening or whatever time it was, I think it was 6, watch the news. And there was nothing but riots on there. I mean, cities being destroyed, turned on fire. I mean, it was really seriously bad. I was kind of young, so I, didn't really take it that serious. I mean, I'm sure, with all of the problems back in the early 60s, people that were adults back then, of course, saw it differently. But anyway, I was like, I think 11 or 12 years old at the time. And some of these pictures, of course, when I was watching this, goes back to those days. And but this particular video, everyone should watch. I'm not going to play it tonight, obviously. But people should go and watch this video. There's a lot of videos on here. This video is very interesting because it starts off laying out some problems here down in South in the South, in America here. But then it goes over to different countries, different nations. One country after another country after another country after another country, same thing. And how communism just grew throughout the world. It was real serious back then. And then, of course, they hit the United States. And they've been working on the United States for a long time. It's been real difficult to take it down, mostly because of the Bill of Rights. That's really our salvation. Of course, ultimately, God is our salvation in this. But nevertheless, it's the Bill of Rights that have given these people a hard time because they can't take our guns, although they're working like heck to take them. And I know New York doubled down on guns, and they've been trying to take guns away from people for quite some time. But that's the key to this whole thing. But anyway, if you really want to get a good picture and a good knowledge of how we got where we're at, and how serious it really is, and what's really going on, when you watch these videos, everything's going to light bulb's going to go off and say, "Wow." The whole puzzle is going to come together. Let's put it that way. But it's more than just this one video in order to make that puzzle come together. It's a number of videos here. There's three other videos, two or three other videos I want to upload and get on the bottom of this page. The other thing I found very interesting here is going back into the beginning of the Democratic Party, and I talk about this here. Matter of fact, I might read this tonight before we really get moving because this is so powerful. But I put in here because slavery seemed to have been a problem here, and that really is what the crust of the matter that they're using to one white against black. That was the key. But these are the two videos. Communists have taken over control of our universities. Now I made this particular title up. It's not the original title of the video, but this is an amazing video. And this says it all for today, what's going on today. Those who want tolerance do not give anyone, they don't tolerate anyone. They want tolerance. They want you to be tolerant to them, but they do not. They are not tolerable of anyone, but they expect that you be. And anyway, there was two videos, and both of these took place. I'm pretty sure, I know this was on a university. This second one, I think, was also at a university. Also, this guy, he's a pastor. He's up there giving a speech, and they removed him from the podium. Now, this is a video also. This is by Edward G. Griffin, or G. Edward Griffin. And I had watched this quite some time ago, and I believe we might have these videos in our course. I think it's our civics course. I'm pretty sure we put them, or a lot of his videos anyway. But this video here, More Deadly Than War, he lays out exactly the plan, what they've been doing. This goes back to about 1961 or 62 when this video was recorded. And he also makes clear the difference, which I never knew. I was always trying to figure, and I guess when I watched it way back, I missed that part, it just didn't click on me. The difference between communism and socialism. There's a huge difference between communism and socialism. But communism is the step to socialism, just like democracy is the step to oligarchy. Nazism is a step to socialism. All of these isms is a step to socialism, because socialism is the final part of the whole game. That's where they're really trying to get to, socialism. And this guy, Griffin, G. Edward Griffin, really lays that down out. I also threw up here the difference between democracy and republic, but in between this video and this video, these are all videos up here, between this video and this video, there's two other videos that I'm going to put up here that I think are very powerful. One which lays out the problem with the trusts and all of these rich people with money doing good things, but really, you know, they have a different, an alternative motive, and they're really moving things in a different direction. They make it appear on one side that it's really good, but on the other side, it's destroying us as a people. It's destroying our republic. And so there's a guy that reveals this, and it's an interesting video. And I know there's another video. I can't think of the name of the other one. It really is. It shows the picture of how far gone the United States is. And you have this Russian agent that you know, fled Russia and came to America, and he talks about the condition of our situation here as far as communism setting in, and he says that people have no idea how far advanced it is. This guy's talking back, I think, in the 70s, maybe the early 80s, but I think it was back in the 70s that video took place. But again, why have we held on so long? Why have we not collapsed yet? You know, because they had to do a lot of work. You know, we have 50 different governments to begin with. Actually, 51 altogether. The United States of America brings us together as a nation, and that, of course, is our federal government. But each state is its own government. Each governor is its own country, you know, a leader of its own country. And each state, of course, has its governor as if it's a president, and it has, of course, a couple of houses, two houses. You have the Senate and the Congress. And so it took a lot of work to take over all those. And they worked very hard in particular states with the large cities in it particularly. And, of course, California was a big target, and New York was a big target. And of course, many other states. But it's amazing the work that they've done in this and how they got to where they got to and how much work it took and how long it took. You know, I'm sure everybody, I would hope that most people realize what was really going to happen. Right now, we should have been in chains or a bullet in the head or we complied. And with the way things should have gone at this point in time if it wasn't for Trump coming into office. Because the last 8 years was the complete takeover of this nation with Hillary Clinton at the head of that, but that didn't happen. It was foiled, you know. But only by the grace of God have we really survived to this point. But anyway, I guess that's all I have to say on that. I don't know if people are really following up on what's going on. We have been posting up the latest of what's been going on. With the report, the news from this Anon SGH. And I don't know if anybody's watched this last issue here on file number 46. 45 was pretty powerful also, but 46 is really revealing. If you haven't watched this, it's a necessity. You want to know what's going behind the scenes right now. How serious the problem is, and how serious it is being, you know, taken care of. We're not hearing this news in the regular news media. It's a blackout as far as that is concerned. So you're not going to find out those things out there, obviously. But anyway, I guess that's all I got. Get back to Anarchy USA. Powerful page. People should go through this. And some people might have seen these things because a couple of these things were on our civics course. But again, these other two are brand new. These two particularly pretty powerful. And it lays out how dangerous this situation is. Okay, with that, we'll move over to... do we have any questions, Jan? for any announcements.
Yes, we do, John. Are you ready for questions?
Yep.
Okay. I have a lawyer I fired because of not doing things the way I wanted them. Now she's billing me and contacting me for more money and charging for the call to me. How do I let her know I'm filing for a redress injury by her? I'm still learning in your class how to do all that. Not ready yet to serve her, but I need to say something to stop the nonsense. Help.
Well, you know, again, I mean, you should write an affidavit. If they're billing you for something and you're not using their service no more, and you've told them to cease and desist from as far as services are concerned, you're going to want to write a detailed paper, point by point, and address, that situation, that, you've dismissed them at a certain date, and these bills are after that date, or whatever the case may be. Anything before the date, they're going to bill you, they're going to come out after you for that. I don't know too much more of the details. It's pretty easy to get rid of a lawyer unless it's court-appointed. If it's court-appointed, it's an uphill battle. That's a whole different story because, they don't want you to come into their court without a lawyer. And if they're giving you a lawyer, it's probably because they're coming out after you for something, obviously. And that's a problem. I don't know any more about the question to really answer it further than that. Did you glean anything out of that more than what I just mentioned as far as an answer, Jen?
Not really, no.
Okay, I guess that's it. Okay.
Next question. How do I void marriage license to get out of that contract?
Well, they got you boxed in, just like they got you boxed in with a birth certificate and a driver's license, a Social Security card. Can't even get a bank account unless you play ball with them. Same thing with marriage. You could just go on with a common law marriage, but then your wife is not going to be considered your wife, or vice versa. Your spouse is not going to be your spouse as far as the law is concerned, because that's how they set it up. And the spouse is not going to get the benefits or the fruits of your labor when you retire and pass away before your spouse or whatever the case may be. Ain't going to have medical coverage. I mean, all these other problems that are going to come along with that. I don't know if there are any states that acknowledge common law marriages without going through the license process, and therefore the spouse reaps the benefits. And they don't acknowledge anything. I mean, nothing. Goodness, in a situation like that, if you had a lot of money and you had, let's say the husband has a lot of money and been working, an estate, a large estate, maybe they're worth millions, and it's now going to be passed over to the spouse, the wife, but they're not literally married. Well, they're married maybe, but they're not married as far as the law is concerned. Well, that's going to go to probate court. They're going to take that away from you. And it's going to be an uphill battle, and it won't be settled till they just suck out all that money and just spend it and disperse it amongst themselves, because that's what they do. It's just, it's the second most evil court in the world, in my opinion, first being the family court. But so the solution, there is no real solution per se to make it work right. You can just have a common law marriage. I don't know how churches would feel about that. That's the other problem. Churches play ball, I think. I don't have enough knowledge about this, so someone might correct me on this, but it's my perception. I perceive that a church is not going to marry you without a marriage license. So that's another problem, and there the church plays a role in that. And again, I don't know if that's true. Maybe they will marry you without that. But unless you get some kind of a, and again, you got to get something that the civil law will accept. So it's not going to accept it. So, yes, you can get married without a marriage license. There's going to be problems where the spouse is going to have a problem reaping the, anything from, the estate or whatever, should one die and be passed on to the other. So the only way we're going to get out of this is get to the other side of things, because that definitely is a problem we need to deal with. Also, the driver's license problem, we need to deal with that. And the Social Security number problem, Look, at Social Security number is isn't too much of a problem, but the big problem is the government's got a number attached to your name, and you're tracked, and that's a problem. The benefits of Social Security, which came up, I think, during the
next question.
Yeah, are you hearing me or no? Am I coming through? Did you lose me?
Did I lose you, or did you lose me?
No, I can hear you.
Okay, maybe Jan got lost for a minute.
Maybe so.
Yeah. I forget exactly where I was, but there are problems with this situation. So, again, we have to figure this out. You know, Social Security number, let's take that. I was just talking about that. You know, do we want to keep Social Security? Is this something we want to decide to come in or out of? You know, and I don't know that it's a bad thing, but it's unlawful. The whole system is unlawful. The other thing is that when the Social Security first came out, the numbers and stuff came out, and it was against the law for anyone to use your Social Security number for any other purpose other than for Social Security. Well, eventually, of course, the banks started using it and requiring it, and then, of course, they chase you down with that, and they attach a lot of things to it, and you can't get a bank account without a Social Security. I mean, it's come to the point in most recent times that you can't even see a doctor without having your Social Security number because they want to know who you are and how to track you down and all that other stuff. It's a problem with that. So how do we solve that problem? It's a good question. I don't have an answer for that. You know. So again, once we get onto the other side, I think Republic Review, this is a problem for that particular group, which is going to go back over to look at all of the laws of the past and get rid of anything that's in legislation that's unlawful. But then, you know, GR that's heading that program, he understands, and we spoke about the problem that we do have certain things that we don't want to lose, that is important, that we have to figure a way to fix it, that is not constitutional. Because of, you know, the times we're in a technological age, and certain things are available that wasn't available in the past, and so we have certain problems. So we have to work through those problems. But apparently we can't work through those problems right now because these people aren't willing to work with anything, and they're hell-bent on just taking over things and destroying our liberty. All right, next question.
We filled out Form 56 in the following way, and we are wondering if this sufficiently states our claim with the IRS that we no longer want to volunteer paying income tax.
Well, Form 56 is fiduciary authority, and that's a form that the IRS would fill out to have to take to the court. I don't know that they misunderstand the use of that particular form. There are two forms, okay? Both of them are affidavit forms. One of them is for, you know, proof of claim, and a proof of claim is an affidavit form. That is the affidavit necessary to take to a judge in order to get a warrant. So there has to be a decision. But in order for the judge to put the warrant out to take something away, they got to give you due process. And due process is not followed by. And even the warrant is part of due process, and that's not lawfully followed by. Now, fiduciary authority, that would be where the IRS would take certain control, fiduciary authority, over the life of an individual because maybe they've lost their mind or something. Maybe they are incapable of taking care of themselves and there's no family, or someone that has died, okay? They would move that into the probate court, and maybe if the IRS was involved with this or any other government agency, that would give fiduciary authority. And I would imagine it would be the IRS to take the fiduciary authority, and then the lawyers would be in there and be appointed as a guardian or someone to settle the estate if the person has passed away. And they ignore that there's a spouse. They ignore that there's children. And they ignore a lot of things. So if they don't have – that's what Form 56 is for. Form 56 is for them to fill out to take fiduciary authority, and it's an affidavit form used to put in court to proceed forward. So I don't know what they were doing with the Form 56. They seem to be using it in reverse, and I'm not aware of it being used in that fashion. But
well, John, what their questions were for part one, on the first line, we put our names in all caps as the vessel. For the fiduciary name, they spelled out their name with upper and lower case as executor. And for authority, they checked other and wrote Genesis 1:26-28, then Genesis 2:7, Job 32:21-22, and so on and so on. Is that acceptable as a way to fill out the form?
My question is why? My question is why even fill out the form? I don't understand what they're trying to do. So, do they say what they're trying to do?
Nope.
So I have no clue either. I have no idea what they're trying to do with that form.
They just wanted to keep the IRS off their back.
Well, there's a couple of ways. If they're in a course, they're going to learn about that, because we're going to go into deep session on that. I've got a lot of cases. I've done a lot of cases on that, and we've perfected that, and I believe it's very powerful, and we'll keep the IRS off your back to a certain degree anyway. At least when you get into the courts, it'll shut them down. And but we'll get to that in our course. I can't really cover it right now at this point in time. So we will come to that. But that's not the way to try to control them. And that form is not for that purpose. And I don't understand how they would try to apply that form in a reverse fashion like that. And I don't know. I have no clue on how that would even work. I don't see it as being possible either. So. I guess that's it. Next question, unless there's another part to that.
Oh, there are, but they're all the same.
Oh, okay. Yeah, look, it's the wrong direction. If the IRS is on your case, know a couple of things. They're going to spend years going back and forth assaulting you by paper in order to get you to acquiesce eventually. If you don't acquiesce within a couple of years, then they just come in anyway. So you got time if they're just starting to assault you with paperwork, number one. The other thing is don't acquiesce. Every time they send a letter, send another letter back, specifically responding to that letter, specifically asking a question by what authority, and let them come back at you. Go down the rabbit holes, because they're going to say, oh, according to the USC 26, blah, 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 subsection this, you have to pay taxes, or you have to do this, or you have to file papers, and so on and so forth. And I went down all those rabbit holes, and I can tell you there's nothing there. It is just words saying go over here. It has nothing to do with what you're even talking about. And so I did write a paper on that, and we will be covering that in the course, so people will be able to protect themselves. But again, at some point in the very near future, the IRS is not going to be there anymore. It's not a government agency. It was never, legislators never worked on anything to bring them into power. They just took a seat amongst the other government agencies, and it's like nobody paid attention. All of a sudden, they got another agency there. Everything that's controlled by the IRS, going all the way down, the ATF, all unlawful. No authority, clearly no constitutional authority. And even there's not even any unlawful legislative authority. So very strange, very strange. But anyway, I guess that's all I got to say on that. Next question.
Okay, the next one was submitted as a question, but it was 2 pages long and there were no questions in it, so I'm going to skip to the one beyond that, which says, do you have any information on how to properly petition our state legislatures with a petition for redress of grievances? We are trying this in Illinois through a group that assembled on Telegram, but our legislature is playing dumb and won't take it. The clerk said there is no process for that. The state senator and rep for the person trying to file it said they can't help. They said we cannot present it to them while they are in session at our Capitol.
Well, again, you'd send a letter to the leadership for a redress of grievances and expect to get something back. If they don't get something back to you, the only really recourse you have is to take it into the state court under the First Amendment, right for redress of grievances. And that's what you stand on, that's what you move on in the courts by filing those papers and then putting down what your redress or what you're looking to get redressed, point by point. Make it very simple. You know, and again, you know, we'll be covering that in our course. We're coming up on pleadings now this week. We're going to start on pleadings, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. So I'm not going to get into much detail at the moment. But on writing the papers, on and especially on a situation like that, you know, you want to use one noun, one verb, one line, next line. You know, and that's what you do, point by point by point by point. And they have to admit or deny. In more complex cases where you have to write a lot, like, you know, most of the cases I do are complex cases, so it's very difficult to write the case that way. So it's really, you know, I'll put numbers on the left, on the side of the paper so they can see, you know, try to respond to everything. But it's more like not a one-liners, but really a story, because it's a story to be told on the facts of the case from one point to another. But you do get, like in my case here, when you move into discovery, that's when I would then take 1 point, 1 point, 1 point. And again, we'll talk about those things when we, you know, get to that point. So it's part of our teaching on court access in the common law.
John, speaking of GR, he has a strategy, and he used this with Bob Schultz and Tony Fuchsia. He helped them out with their case, but he has a strategy for this. If you wanted to share reclaimingtherepublic.org, on the right-hand side, if you scroll down to the Contact Us button, click on that, and you can leave him a voicemail message. He will listen to it and tell you of his strategy as far as First Amendment petitions.
I didn't know that, but go ahead.
Yeah, he has that in the whole goal is to get to Republic Review. It's a platform for bringing in Republic Review, but he has it worked out pretty well. I thought you might want to know.
All right. Yeah, we have a page on Republic Review under Start a Committee of Safety. I thought that was the most appropriate place to put it, because we want the committees of safety, all of the committees of safety that become conscious of this, and at some point in time is able to add on a subcommittee. You have enough members to create something to assist the Republic Review. But you could see right here under Start a Committee of Safety, come down to Public Review. And Republic Review on this page here, we give you a pretty good, these are videos put together by GR in order to introduce, and he also did a bullet point on, you know, on what Republic Review is all about. And we have all that on this page here. We also have links to his page, so you can go visit his page and then see the things that he was talking. Now, the one you're talking about is reclaimingtherepublic.org. Is that the right one, Eric?
That is correct.
Okay, so let's click on that. And where did we find it? On the right side here, you're saying?
You see down there at the bottom where it says Contact Us.
Oh, Contact Us. Okay, click on that.
If you click on that, it'll give you a phone number. And so who's ever asking this question, if they call right just below your cursor, if they'll call that number and leave a voicemail message, he tells me he doesn't get too many calls, and he responds to all of them. So I'm sure he'll be happy to share his strategy.
Okay, now, did you say there was something on his page that expressed and expounded on his strategy concerning redress of grievances? Was there anything?
If you want to see that, go to at the very bottom of your screen where it says petitions.
Down here somewhere?
No. Scroll back up a little bit. Right, yeah, just above. Nope, stop. Look to the right under podcast archives. It says petitions. If you click on that.
Petitions, okay.
Yeah, in fact, just at the beginning of this call, right at the beginning of this call, he called me to share a new one. So if you scroll down to the bottom, he's got, it's a hefty one. At this point, it's 26 pages. It's about the CBDCs and the FedNow thing that they're trying to usher in right now. But his strategy is to, you take it to your county commissioner or your board, or your sheriff. And he says you don't have to file it in the court, and it'll stand until they answer it. I think a little higher up, and you might see the new 26-pager about the CBDCs. A little higher? Let's see that's it. Right there. Constitution by allowing anything other than gold or silver. Yep, that's the brand new one. He's got some very interesting ones. I recommend you talk to him about it, because it's an interesting...
Yeah, definitely. Well, we'll be meeting with him hopefully next week, right?
Yeah, you know what? He's going to be able to make it a week from tomorrow, as will Mark. I spoke with him earlier, too.
And Mark's going to lead the program?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's good. All right, and we should get any other national leader that we can find that is compatible to what we're doing and invite them to that meeting. But I'll connect with DR at that meeting and maybe make a meeting after that meeting or not too long after that meeting where we can discuss and get some ideas on redress of grievances to understand what his thinking and strategy is.
Wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Where were we? I guess we're back to you, Dan, right?
We have the last question has three parts. The first part, excuse me. Are any of the other states besides Massachusetts utilizing the grand juries? If not, what are the barriers?
The barriers are we're not ready to go into the courts and people aren't educated enough to really form the necessary process to take control of the grand and petit juries. That's the problem. People have asked me for certain things, and I'm writing a handbook on this, and people have wanted the handbook, and I'm not willing to give that handbook out to people at this point in time. It's not done anyway. It'll go out when we get ready to go in. That's number one. The handbook in itself is not going to prepare someone, educate someone to certain knowledges that they need and should have, okay, in order to go do what we're planning to teach people to do. We have to understand the law. Anybody that's going to be participating in this, definitely the law course that's live and active right now is a definite requirement. Because if you don't understand the law and who we are as a people and what our heritage is, and the heritage is in the law, and it's protected by the law, and so on. So, you know, government by consent is an unalienable right. It's a right. That's a right of the people. And the right of the people to have government by consent is to control their courts 100% by the people and to control our political process 100% by the people. Nothing interfering with that. And now with the courts, though, look, I've seen people pull the juries together, and I've heard about them. I wouldn't say I've seen them. I heard about them, and I talked to some people and what's in their mind coming in with anger. Well, right there, you're just as bad as they are. If you're going to come in with an anger, you're there. That's a problem. You have to be careful. You're not setting the stage of tainting the jury yourself. They're coming in with a jury that is really not authorized in the sense that it's coming in with a bone to pick, so to speak. Everything has to be done properly and lawfully and with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And those words just can't be spoken and say, oh, yeah, okay, fine. No. We have to think about those things. We have to take an oath on those things. We have to learn what these things mean. What is honor? What is justice? What is mercy? You know? So people are just angry and operating out of that anger. That's a problem. We also know that operating as a grand jury, we are operating as a grand jury, as a matter of fact, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, collectively coming together by forming grand juries of every state, and then all the states coming together forming the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. So we're the only one that's active in this process at this moment. During this time period, you know, our only purpose, and you can't have a grand jury that's just going, or even an administrative control in that grand jury, in a sense. Let's say a grand jury. You can't have a grand jury by the same people all the time forever. It's not how it works. It's constantly needs to be refreshed. It's the administration that we're creating. And the administration controls the process and the oversight of the grand jury and the orientation of the grand jury or the trial jury to make sure that they understand what their duty is as a jurist. And we have two handbooks on that. Both of those handbooks are available. You can find them up under Starter Committee of Safety and come down to Handbooks and Tools, okay? And you can get these two handbooks right in here. This is the Grand Jury Handbook, okay? It's 30 pages, and this is what is used to orientate the grand jury. We also have a Petit Jury Handbook, okay? That one's 41 pages, and this orientates the petty jury. So this is the mindset of the petty jury or the grand jury that they need to have before going to hear a case. And you know, again, of course, they orientate the jury and make them a civil law grand jury or a petty jury. We are making them a common law grand jury. And people need to understand the difference. They have to, and again, we need to be operating under the auspices of the court system, okay? And so we have to be operating inside the courthouse itself. So there's a lot involved here, you know. People have asked me to help them start a jury here or there, and it would be wrongdoing for me to do that without first, you know, talking to them and making sure they understand the proper education that they need in order to go forward in this thing. So it would be wrongdoing for me. It's definitely a wrongdoing for them to operate without the knowledge of common law. Those people that are in the course, I'm sure they're hearing a lot of things that they've never heard before. They're seeing a lot of things that they never saw before. And all those things have been robbed away from us. The people don't know about it. We should have been taught it in school, but we haven't been. So people are hearing about it for the first time. And this is the kind of mindset you have to have. This is, if you're going to operate as a true grand jury or a true petty jury, you have to know the common law. You have to understand the common law. And it's a good idea to understand the process, but that's not important as much as the understanding of the common law, which really brings us to the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and maxims and so on. So it's a problem. For people trying to do these things outside of that. And again, there's no one out there that I'm aware of that's teaching people these things other than National Liberty Alliance, and that's our purpose, is really to facilitate an education on these kind of things, particularly, of course, the courts and the political process, because that's where we control our government. Those are the two power structures, and we have to understand them. We have to take control of them. So I guess that's it for the answer. What's next?
The second part is, if one county is set up and running, can we start utilizing the grand jury to set an example for others to get started?
It can't get started until, you have to have your committees of safety moving along at the same time. That's an important part of the process. Not a necessity, but important part of the process. That's number one. But Let me go back. That's number two, maybe. Number one is for the unified United States common law grand jury to be successful in the courts with the process we have going on right now to bring back courts of justice, which are common law courts. We don't have courts of justice. That means we don't have common law courts. We don't have courts that acknowledge the Bill of Rights. They do not acknowledge the Bill of Rights. Anybody stuck in the courthouse, in the courtroom, especially if you're being assaulted by the IRS or many other places, many other government agencies, look at these people out there with January 6th thing. All those people, they're not getting the Bill of Rights. The court is ignoring the Bill of Rights. You can argue and bring it up till the cows come home, and they're still not going to give it to you because they've robbed it, and they have abrogated the common law in 1938. Now, they won't admit that. They'll silence you. That's why you have to have a lawyer, because only your lawyer will speak, and the lawyer will never bring these things up. But if you bring it up in the courtroom, you might even get zapped with one of those zappers, and that has happened. Just quiet there, shut up there, don't talk. That's the attitude. It's not going to come up in the courtroom. Again, if you're going in with lawyers. If you're not going in with a lawyer, they're going to do everything they can to stick a lawyer on you, and, you know, again, that becomes another problem. So people that have not been in the courts, especially being assaulted by some government agency to be brought into that court, people who haven't been under that situation don't understand it's not there no more. Constitution is not there. The civil law is there. So I advise everyone to take this course that we're teaching right now, because that's your heritage. If you don't know those things, you can't know government, you can't control your government, and you certainly can't protect yourself if you had to go into a court of law. There are certain things you can put pressure under these people to a certain degree under certain circumstances and certain cases. But if they're coming out after you, Look what they've done to the what's the name of those people? The Hammonds, I think it was. And look what they've done to Lavoie Finnegan, and what's that other big family that was stuck in that situation some years back? Does anybody remember there? The Hammonds, the Lavoie Finnegan, and
Hammonds was one of them. Finnegan was another.
No, the other one. What was it? Who? Someone said it, I think.
Bundys.
The Bundys. Okay. Look what happened to all those people. You know, and thank God, the Hammonds, when they were in court, one of the Hammonds was able to talk a bit, quite a bit, and make their positions, and they reached the jury. The jury heard it. Okay. And all those people that made deals with the government and took 2 years or 4 years or whatever it was on something they weren't even guilty of because they said, hey, look, we're going after 20 years. We'll make a deal. We'll give you four. Okay. Take the deal. A lot of people took those deals. Okay. And the rest of them that didn't take it, the Hammonds didn't take it. And the rest of them that didn't take it, and the Bundys didn't take it. And so they went through the process. They won the case because they were able to, you know, send their message, so to speak, in the courtroom to the jury. And someone in the jury heard it and understood it, and they got found it not guilty. So all those other people, what about the people who took the pleas? What happened to them? Well, they're serving their sentence, aren't they? That's unjust. That's unrighteous. That court system should have done something about that. But they didn't. Why? Because of the status quo. It's a problem. And you need to be able to understand that. And that's what we're trying to get rid of. There is no constitution in the courts. Your Bill of Rights does not exist. They exist only in your mind. That's all. It's on paper and in your mind. Our government is not respecting it or acknowledging it. Occasionally you can get it through. Don't get me wrong. But generally speaking, that's the problem. And people need to be standing up. You know, people who aren't standing up because of fear, well, look at, if we lose, your fear is going to be a lot greater than this. The cost and the penalty upon your physical body and whatever is going to be far greater than this, because they're not going to tolerate anything if they were to win this situation, which they're not going to, but in any event. Time to stand. All right, anything else, Jan?
Yes, there is a third part. I know our founders utilized committees of safety, but given the urgency of our situation, can a grand jury be established and used regardless of a committee of safety being set up, or can we do both at the same time to try and get the process moving and utilize the jury while still building the committee of safety?
Well, again, National Liberty Alliance is not going to assist anyone to create a grand jury or give any knowledge on those things outside of the education that we give and the process that we're teaching in order that we do it the right way. And people, you know, they think that they can have this knowledge by a tweet. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't happen that way. Also, you're going to find yourself in trouble maybe because they're going to say, you're not really a grand jury and you need to be arrested or something of that nature. Again, we want to be pushing forward to be operating under the auspices of the court. That is why when we operated as a unified and continue to operate as a unified United States common law grand jury, even though we can't get access inside the courts, well, we're operating in a tent right outside the court. And we are putting all our paperwork inside the court. Nothing is in secret. Everything is done properly and lawfully. You know, people can't just haphazardly do this. I know there are people teaching some things here, you know, pull 25 people together and do this or that, the other thing. And that could be as unjust as anything else, can't it? You see, if you don't have the right knowledge, you don't have the right attitude, it becomes a wrongdoing. You're just as guilty as they are. So I'm not going to help anyone to do any of those things outside the process we're teaching. If they want to learn these things, get into our courses, start getting involved, work with trying to develop the committees of safety as you're educating yourself in order to become an administrator in order to deal with the juries inside the courthouse, eventually inside the courthouse anyway. We have seven courses or six courses, I don't remember how many, that all of them need to be taken by anyone that's going to become an administrator. So don't try to find a shortcut. get into the courses, go through all of it, get into the law course, get the knowledge, get the understanding that you need to have basic as the administrators. And the handbook will be written, which is sort of a book of operations, policies and procedures, if you might want to call it that, how you proceed. Also being very careful that you don't taint the grand jury. Also that you don't add to what the grand jury says at the end of the day, or the petit jury. You see, and again, you wouldn't have to worry too much about the petit jury because there's a legal process that handles the conclusion on that. But as far as the grand jury is concerned, it becomes problematic for people without the right mindset. All kinds of violations could be taking place, and you could be held liable for things also. Because you're injuring people and using the instrument of law to do so. So anyway, I guess that's about all I have to say on that. If you want to learn these things, start your education, get involved, and try to excite. If you can't lead developing a committee of safety, you can try to incite and excite people about this and try to get people going to that'll take the lead and assist them in any way you can. But that's where your work should be, right there, doing that and educating at the same time. All right, anything else?
No, that was the last question, John.
Do we have any announcements?
No.
No announcements. Okay, let me close down some of these things. All right, I guess we'll go right into Q&A. All I can say again is, you know, I'm bringing this up because it's that important that people really see this Anarchy USA. Again, this was done back in the 60s, and it's pretty powerful, and it'll really bring the puzzle together, all of these videos together. Okay, with that, we'll go to open forum here. We'll go into Q&A. Anybody wants to get into the Q&A, if you're on a phone, star 6 and a 1, whatever app you have should say enter the queue or whatever it says on it, I don't know. So, okay, we'll take our first person. It looks like Kathy. How you doing, Kathy? You got the mic. Go right ahead. And you're from Iowa.
Hi, John.
Yep.
Can you explain jurisdiction a little bit? I mean, I know it's a chapter in the book, but is there
jurisdiction?
When you say to challenge jurisdiction,
yeah. When I say challenge jurisdiction, what?
Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, there in the federal courts there are 51. No, let me go back. In Black's Law Dictionary, they talk. There's 51 jurisdictions in there. A lot of what's in Black's Law doesn't apply to our courts. So you have to really realize that. And when you read through it, you'll see it. It becomes really sort of logic because the way when you look at different things in there, it becomes very logical that this doesn't apply to this court and that doesn't apply to that court in the sense that our court runs according to the common law. But in our courts, it's controlled by 58 jurisdictions, 57 USC codes, and I think there's one or two vacancies inside there, but right, there's 57 numbers, so we'll say 57. So there's 57 US codes. Each one of those codes is a jurisdiction. Let's take, for instance, if there's something concerning the Office of the Presidency, that might be USC 1, not 3, I think, somewhere around there. Well, that's the jurisdiction that's going to be decided. It's a deciding factor. It's the equity, legislative law, positive law written up by legislators in order to control and the office of the presidency. Lawful and good. And thankfully, it was done a long time ago. You know, if it was written today, forget about it. In any event, but they do add to these things. And therein is the problem and the danger. So every agency that you can think of, if it's commercial activity, they're governed under certain things. I think it's USC 18 and potentially 28. I think 28 is a blanket for all of the agencies. But US 18, I believe, is when it really controls, I believe, the commercial. I'm not an expert in the codes nor the law in the codes. I mean, each one of those codes, some of these codes have thousands of pages, and I have no interest in learning those things. But people who all want to make a living focusing in on a certain particular jurisdiction and be knowledgeable in that area. You know, it's an education on its own, each one of these codes. Now, law is the 58th, if you want to call it. Doesn't have a number to it, obviously. That's why the Constitution says that the jurisdiction is law and equity. Again, equity is positive law, legislative law, with the authority given under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. That's the authority for that. And anything repugnant to the Constitution, particularly the Bill of Rights as a measuring tape or stick against it, makes it null or void if it's repugnant to that. The other side is law. If you go into Black's Law Dictionary, Bouvier's Dictionary, law and the word law, in law, at law, law, all is always and always will be common law. So that's the law courts we go in. And common law courts, the jurisdiction of the common law court is that which proceeds according to the common law. And that's the jurisdiction. So you're under common law, you're not under equity. If you're in equity, you're under a particular code, depending on what's going on. All of these people out there in January 6th, they're under 18 and 28. That's what they used against these people. That in itself wasn't lawful. And of course, it becomes a different story when there's an assault upon the government and it has to be suppressed. So it's called an insurrection. But that wasn't an insurrection. It was an insurrection. It was an insurrection by the FBI and potentially the local police out there. It was an insurrection by them. It was an insurrection by certain members of Congress, because the whole thing was planned, organized, and orchestrated. So they were dressed up as Trump supporters and did a lot of damage and really pushed forward a rioting condition. But most people there, when you really look at the video, it looks very unorganized and everything, but it definitely was not total violence, throwing bottles and, you know, all kinds of craziness. There was just miscellaneous violence here or there, and they were trying to disrupt the entire thing, and they didn't get that, thankfully. But most of it was really peaceful. People just, it looked very unorganized, but just walking around, looking at things, and that's it. But hopefully that answered your question as far as jurisdiction. So jurisdiction we're concerned with is that which proceeds according to the course of the common and the rules of common law.
Thank you.
All righty. Okay, let's take Larry, it looks like from Arizona. Larry, you got the mic.
Hi, John. Thank you for taking my call. I just have a follow-up question on something that I heard you say earlier. Mm-hmm. You were talking about when we go in the courts, we don't have to pay fees or whatever. I'm not really sure what you meant by that.
Yeah, justice will not be sold. That's a common law maxim. It's in the Magna Carta. We will sell to no man. It's in the American jurisprudence, which quotes the Magna Carta. Justice is to be sold to no man. You do not pay for justice. It costs you hundreds of thousands of dollars to fight a serious case, maybe even millions of dollars. You look at the people, look at some of the people most recently, the last few years, well-known people who have been assaulted and had to hire a lawyer. Look at Flynn, all the money that Flynn, millions of dollars, he had to go into debt. I mean, what justice is that you have to have a million? I don't have $1 million, so justice isn't available for me, I guess, in their system. That's the problem. So everything is free. Now, they charge money, and there's U.S. Supreme Court rulings, and we do put that up, put that as far as our position is to, try to beat out the money, because I'm going to ask for my money when I go into court. I want my money back. But the thing is that when you go into the court, they require you to get past that door. You have to pay the tolls and to get a number and to get access. If not, then you have to open up all of your business to them and show them that you have nothing. But even people who have something, it's so tough they still can't afford it. I mean, and who can afford the lawyers? It's just a mess. So it never should be done. But the United States Supreme Court has ruled, that the cost to get into court was never intended for the people, but for fiction only. So if it's a corporation, they should pay. I agree, they should pay. If it's a corporation, they should pay to get into the courts. So that's a free access to every man is what is required. But, you know, we have to pay. If you go into the federal court, I think it's $405. Every time you go into to open a case, you have to put up that $405. Every time, I've been thrown out on some federal cases. I've gone back on the same case 3 or 4 times. Every time, I had to go back in and pay another $410. You know, and another game they play, throw you out again. And it just goes on and on. It's just total insanity. So they block the doors of justice. Actually, there is no more justice beyond those doors anyway. So, but, yeah, we shouldn't be paying for anything. And people should know how to take care of their own business. Even if they hire a lawyer, you know, let's say in the future, you hire a lawyer, you have to put that lawyer on a short leash. You know, when he or she writes a paper for you, don't send it until I look at it. You need to understand what's going on. You need to understand how it works. You may say, take a red pen and start making some marks and say, this is the way we're going to go. Take control of your case. If you can't articulate it, let them articulate it, but control that individual, okay? What they can say, what they can't say, what your position is, the points you want to make on your case. Also, you know, hey, when you're in the courtroom and you're talking, don't look behind you because you might see me. And you will see me, as a matter of fact, because when they're called into court for all of these different things, you know, because it goes through the process, through the pleadings, from time to time you have to go in for hearings because, you know, one side will argue this and you'll argue that, and you're trying to push something through and they're trying to prevent it from going through, and then you have to really go through the system to push it through, and you go through and make your argument and to get your paperwork through or whatever it is you're trying to do. If you're trying to force, for instance, force the other side for discovery, you might have a hearing if they're not responding. But most stuff is done by paper without going in. But sometimes they like to hear it in the court, and I don't know. I think it should all be done on paper before you get into the court. That's my opinion, because you could do a much better case anyway. You know, there's a lot that could be missed going in when you're articulating your case in a position of an argument in order to push something forward. But that's just how the system works. And repeat the question one more time.
Okay. I understand about the filing fees, but are you saying that when you go into court, because of the Supreme Court decision, are you able to claim it back?
Because of the common law, you should be able to claim it back. Because of the common law, they shouldn't have asked you for a dime. No, the thing is people don't ask for it, you know, but... I have a case coming up that I'll be going in, and I don't have to pay to get into the door. But once I get into the door, on the first meeting in the courthouse, as far as an argument to take place, I'm going to make my point. I may just make a paper. I want my money back. I had to pay to get in here, and that was really a crime. You charged me money for justice. That's a crime. And of course they don't see it that way because they've been taught civil law, but that's my argument and I will make it. I don't know what I'll get out of it, but you know, it is what it is, I guess. On the other side, we won't pay because we wouldn't be courts of justice if we do. We'll have a lot more clout and a lot more to say on the other side.
Well, I could, all I have to say about the other side is Maranatha. You know what that means?
That's familiar. I've heard that before. That's Greek, isn't it?
Yeah, it means Lord, come quickly.
Okay, yeah, I've heard that before. I didn't remember what it meant. But I think it is Greek now, right?
Yeah, I think it may be, but I'm not real sure.
Yeah.
I know I taught it to me years ago.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay.
Thank you. Are you?
Thank you. Okay, anybody wants to get into the queue? We only got a few people in there. Now's the time to get in. Okay, let us take our next caller. Cynthia, what state are you from, Cynthia?
Hawaii.
Hawaii. Aloha.
Hi, I'm in your class and appreciate this. First of all, comment. Terry, I believe it was talking about needing to scan older documents. And I wanted to share that there's a free app you can get on your phone called Adobe Scan. And then you can just use your phone to take the pictures. You can scan up to 25 pages each time you do it. And then when you're done with your scan, it's super simple. You just turn it into a PDF, and then you can email it to yourself and get the link.
Does it have the OCR power to turn it into actual letters to be able to cut and paste? Do you know?
Yeah, so like if you have a book, you just point your, with your, if you have Adobe Scan app that you download on your phone, then you just point the phone at whatever you want to take a scan of, and you take pictures, and then it turns it into like a PDF file of all of your documents.
Right, and then this to PDF should be able to be turned into regular word processor type thing, print.
Yeah, I haven't done much of that, but I don't know. I just wanted to offer that as a suggestion.
Okay. I do know that you can take, if you have the program, you can take any PDF and turn it into, word processor type print or whatever. But
can I say something?
Yep.
Okay. Cynthia Joe, I looked, and where I thought it was, I was wrong. It didn't say it at Pursuit of Happiness, though I've heard that. I could not find anything anywhere which supported that assertion.
Oh, that was
However, I did find that in the usurpations towards the end of the Declaration of Independence, where he says he's done this to us, he's done this to us, he's done this to us, a whole section was taken out on the insistence of South Carolina and Georgia about how bad slavery was and how the king had supported it. So that was all taken out.
Wow.
So I think that must have been what I was remembering. My apologies. As soon as I find it, I will put it up on the website. Thank you.
Thank you. That was actually Hadassah who had been asking that, but I was just chiming in on the scan part. And then I wanted to say one other thing, John. I was the one who wrote the question in about Form 56. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. What are you trying to do with that?
Okay, well, so that's the reason I was asking is David Strait is teaching that. And we're very skeptical now. We did go through the process of, supposedly becoming state nationals, whatever that means. But
well, again, I don't know why. Look, again, David Strait understands the problem better than I do, and everything I've heard from him is right on the mark, except for his, how to deal with it as far as his process. I disagree with all that. I think, well, we teach something different, and you should be able to see what we're teaching, see what he's teaching, and then make the decision on how you see it. But Form 56 is a fiduciary relationship. It's a notice concerning fiduciary relationship. And it's set in, this is an IRS form, okay? This is right here. It tells you Department of the Treasury Internal Revenue Service. And this is, they have to fill this form out, and it's an affidavit, so they have to swear on this thing, and they have to bring it into the court. Okay, and they're trying to take away someone's right. They're trying to take authority over an individual. Okay, mm-hmm. A fiduciary relationship. The bank has. We have fiduciary relationships with the bank. Okay, there's a trust there, but this particular form is for the IRS. I don't know how. And again, they're trying to take authority of a person. They're having the fiduciary relationship, fiduciary authority. The right to make all your legal decisions.
Okay, so how the way that he had it, us fill it out and explain it is that we are, in the common law, the people, the executor, and we're taking control.
That's what I say. That's your natural state of being.
Right.
You're an executor.
And they're saying, I guess the form itself is expressing that the all caps name, the vessel, as he says, is that
now we're playing into their game. Why play into their game? You see, this is their sandbox. All this stuff is their sandbox. These are the things that they created. These are the things that they use to give themselves a good feeling that we've done everything legal. We've gave opportunity for that to get out of this thing. No. This is all. It's all a fraud. It's conspiracy. It's subversion. It's an assault upon us. It is denial of due process. It's all kinds of things. Okay. Right. Don't. You see, we're not going to play in their sandbox. We're going to go in our sandbox. We're going to bring the common law in, and that's where we belong, under God, period.
So that's where we have gotten to, because it was over a year ago. We studied, and then we very quickly realized that we need to just stand on common law, and that's what we've been studying, and it's a grace of God that we found your course through Charlotte, who's over in Oahu here in Hawaii, and we're excited to be studying because we love what you just said. It's a bunch of hogwash, and David Strait information does seem to be accurate, but
it is accurate. It's very accurate, but it's their sandbox, and that knowledge is important to know at least the framework of that knowledge. And I've written a paper on the framework of that knowledge, which lays out all of the assault by the American Bar Association for the sole purpose to destroy our courts of justice. That's what that's all about, and so we need to understand that and see how they done it. And that gives us, once you understand it, now you know how to defend it, okay, to defend yourself. But your best way to argue against these people, depending if you're going up against the IRS, is this an IRS thing or some other thing?
We're not into any danger at all. We have still played by, their crazy de facto rules, but we were just, wanting to learn, and we're going to be learning in your course, I heard you say earlier, so... That's really wonderful. And then you had said that years back you had gone down the road of being a state national or a state citizen.
No, I never got all the way through that. What I did, the furthest I got was making a declaration of who I am and filing it with the county. Okay. And now I look back and... I would never tell anyone to do anything like that. It hasn't damaged me in a sense, but it is kind of there, but that's fine. But I haven't gotten rid of my driver's license, Social Security, birth certificate, and left my citizenship. And remember, if you give up your citizenship, you're no longer a citizen in the United States. And when they get enough of you together, when they decide to go out, if they ever would get to this point, they can deport you. You'd be living on a boat out in sea because you wouldn't be able to go into any port.
Right.
There was a movie out there where the guy was stuck in big actor. I just can't think of his name. I hear he's been out to the island himself. But anyway, he was stuck in an airport and couldn't leave the airport. Well, that's kind of based on another story that goes way back, and I don't know whether it was a movie or not, but a guy that was stuck on a ship because he was a man without a country. He couldn't leave a ship. So that was kind of the same idea, using an airport, I guess.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people, supposedly 22 million people at this point have, repudiated David Strait method and, gotten their passports, but... no one's been able to ever verify whether or not they have actually had their quote status changed, to a state national versus a citizen. That's the corporate. With David Strait's method,
I don't know even know where a state national comes from. I don't know what that means. And I do know that the only thing lawful as far as being in this, either born a natural-born citizen, so you're natural-born, or you have to become a citizen, and there's a process of that, and that's left to the federal government. It's in the Constitution that the federal government handles that. And so you become a citizen. We're all, every single one of us is a citizen of the United States. Every single one of us. Okay? And you're also a citizen of your state. And the 14th Amendment makes this point, too. It made the statement it was for the slaves because there was a problem with the slaves trying to find liberty. And then they had the Jim Crow laws. Which, by the way, every step of the way was the Democrats. It's the Democrats that brought the slaves in a sense. It's the Democrats that maintained the slavery. It was the Democrats that fought against not having the slaves free. It's the Democrats that was behind the Jim Crow laws. It's the Democrats that have kept them, I don't like to use this term, but sort of on the plantation in the sense of a mindset, that they make them feel like they're not a citizen and they're not part of who we are as a people of the United States. It's a state of mind is what they've done. And I'll tell you what, the page I was sharing here before, let me just jump back here again. This page here that I just put up yesterday, this is why I put that page up here, is mostly because to make that point against the Democrats. And I'm going to take the opportunity to read this right now because I think it fits right into what we're talking about. The ABA and the Democratic Party. Okay, this is going to lay out the whole process. The ABA subverted our common law judicial system as the Democratic Party subverted our political system, both working together to unlawfully transform our republic to a democracy, at least in the minds of the people. Okay, it's all de facto. And as long as the mentality of the people believe and act as a democracy and not a republic, which is ruled by law, we will continue as a de facto democracy. The Republican Party that was bestowed upon President Lincoln in 1861 led the battle against slavery and the suppression of black Americans after they were liberated. People will try to say, oh, it wasn't about slavery, it was about state issues. The state issue was about slavery. That was the primary thing. Anything else would never have brought us into the war. And you know what? I've given a lot of thought to this. You know, I puzzled things together, and of course, you're always puzzling, looking for justice. What is right and what is wrong? And the Constitution talks about that the United States government, it is their duty to make sure we have a Republican form of government. And every state of this union that continued with slavery, okay, they were injuring their people. They were no longer a Republican form of government because the sense that the law didn't apply to some of the people because of the color of their skin. Okay, so they were in violation of that to begin with. But you know, the federal government has a duty to protect the people's unalienable rights, and that's why if you go into federal court, you go into federal court for cause, cause, for cause, and the cause must be something in the Bill of Rights under the Constitution. So there has to be a constitutional violation for the court to be able to hear it. That's part of the process, okay? And it is their duty. It is their duty, the court's duty, to make sure that the law is applied properly, that they champion the unalienable rights of the people. It's their duty to do that. Well, the whole federal government, it's their duty to champion the rights of the people. So Lincoln had every right to go to war and to deal with the suppression against the people of color down in the states where the slaves were, and to free them from the tyranny, because all men were created equal. That is the foundation of our law in the Declaration of Independence. So anyway, we read here, led the battle against slavery and the suppression of black Americans after they were liberated. Over time, the Republican Party was infiltrated by, let me go back again, because that didn't work out, you know, in context correctly, if I broke it up. The Republican Party that was bestowed upon President Lincoln in 1861 led the battle against slavery and the suppression of black Americans after they were liberated. Over time, the Republican Party was, I did a paper on Jefferson, and I also have a video on Jefferson, a PowerPoint, on slavery. And if you go through that, you can see what Lincoln had to say concerning slavery, and he felt that it was his duty. He felt that, he was destined to deal with this problem. Over time, the Republican Party was infiltrated by the same behind-the-scenes evil forces in the Democratic Party in an effort to continue the suppression of black Americans, which was necessary to keep them with a victim mentality in order to maintain a division between black and white. Nevertheless, the majority of Republicans believe in the law, but their downfall is in their confliction in the belief that we are a democracy. Now, here I'd look, go back into history and step back in history a little bit to get a bigger picture. And it's over. I can't believe this, you know. I every step of the way to destroy the minorities was done by the Democratic Party. Every step of the way, every act, every move, and yet they have all of these people to believe that they're the ones that's going to protect them when they're the ones that kept them on the plantation, if I might use that kind of a phrase. In other words, they are in it's a state of mind, okay. And a state of belief, and they see themselves as victims. And if you see yourself as a victim, you can't climb out. You know, let me read on, because I think the example is in here instead of me saying it. And let me just make a note to remember this in case I didn't write it in here, on the victim mentality. Okay, history. In 1750, the British king established the bar in the 13 colonies in order to change our common law to civil law and bring the colonies back under British control. The British bar eventually became the ABA, the American Bar Association, and have been working behind the scenes to destroy our republic by abrogating the common law and replace it with civil law. This was accomplished in 1938 by the Rules Enabling Act of 1934. That's why you don't have the constitutional rights anymore or unalienable rights when you go into a court. If they're hitting you with a criminal situation, especially in the federal courts, you have a better chance in the state courts, though, in that issue. Meanwhile, during the constitutional debates in 1787, a faction called themselves the Federalists, led by Alexander Hamilton. And anybody who knows about Alexander Hamilton knows already this is a problem. Hamilton's mentors... Hamilton's mentors were bankers. Okay, so Federalists led by Alexander Hamilton, influenced by the foreign banksters, eventually became the first political party called the Federalists in 1789. The Federalists attempted to establish a large federal government. And by the way, you know, the Federalist Papers is a good paper. It's a good debate, and it created our Constitution, and it did a good job. It would have been a disaster without the Anti-Federalists, which really brought forth the birth of the Bill of Rights, and the Bill of Rights is what has kept us free. The Bill of Rights is why we still are a free people, because that's been a major problem for them. Anyway, the Federalists attempted to establish a large federal government, and a national bank. They were opposed by Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, who strove for a weaker federal government and stronger state governments. At the convention, three states refused to sign the Constitution, so they couldn't get it done. Refused to sign the Constitution without adding a Bill of Prohibitions that became known as the Bill of Rights. The debates that established the bill was eventually labeled the Anti-Federalists. The Federalists led by unprincipled men formed divisions, thereby forcing the creation of political parties that eventually would overthrow the Republic. The founders were against political parties. You know, let me see if I can make this a little bigger. I don't know if people's having a problem reading it, but this may help a little bit. Okay, the founders were against political parties. This was summed up by George Washington in his farewell address, where he said, "All obstructions to the execution of the laws, all combinations and associations under whatever plausible character, with a real design to direct, control, counteract, or awe the regular deliberation and action of the constitutional authorities, are destructive to this fundamental principle and of the fatal tendency. They serve to organize faction, to give it an artificial and an extraordinary force, to put in the place of the delegated will of the nation the will of a party, often a small but artful and enterprising minority of the community, and according to the alternate triumphs of different parties, to make the public administration the mirror of the ill-concerted and incongruous projects of factions rather than the organ of consistent and wholesome plans digested by common councils and modified by mutual interest. However, combinations or associations of the above description may now and then answer popular ends, they are likely in the course of time and things to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins, the controls, the powers, the authorities, the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which have lifted them up to unjust dominions. What are the reins? That's the big question. What are the reins that he's talking about? The reins of government. Well, the reins of government is the control of our courts and the control of our political power. People have lost that control. That's what, those are the reins. That's the power structures. That's how we have government by consent from those two power points or power structures. The Federalists controlled the national government until 1801, and it was absorbed by the Democratic Party, which was formed in 1792, and determined to divide the people. This was the subversion from the very beginning. The enemy has been in the gates from the very beginning. let's see where I'm at here. Divide the people. Okay. Absorbed the Democratic Party, which was formed in 1792 and determined to divide the people and change our republic to a democracy. After the Civil War, most white Southerners opposed radical Reconstruction and the Republican Party's support of black civil and political rights. The Republicans from day one was up against trying to get freedom and these people, you know, to be free and think free and be, do whatever they want, you know, the right to pursuit of happiness. So supported the black civil and political rights. The Democratic Party identified itself as the party of white supremacy and demoralized the Republican Party as being Negro dominated, even though whites were in control. Determined to recapture the South, Southern Democrats redeemed state after state, sometimes peacefully, other times by fraud and violence. By 1877, when Reconstruction was officially over, the Democratic Party, Democratic Party controlled by every Southern state, while Northern Democrats, most of whom had prejudicial attitudes towards black, offered no challenge to the discriminatory policies of the Southern Democrats. Southerners were able to control most of the committees in both houses of Congress. Well, we've been watching that, haven't we, for quite some time. Controlling both houses and kill any civil rights legislation, just like they've been doing now. Controlling anything that's good for the people. Even though Franklin Delano Roosevelt was a Democrat and a relatively liberal president during the 1930s and the 40s, he rarely challenged the powerful, fully entrenched Southern bloc. When the House passed the Anti-Federalist Anti-Lynching Bill several times in the 1930s, Southern senators filibustered it and prevented its passing. The roots of Jim Crow laws, supported by Democrats, began as early as 1865. You know, and the Jim Crow laws is what created that separation. You couldn't use the same bathrooms. You couldn't drink out of the same water fountains. You couldn't go into the same, places to eat. I mean, you can't ride. You had to ride in the back of the bus. It was segregation. That's what the Jim Crow laws were all about. Legislated by a collection of states and local statutes that legalized racial segregation, named after a black minstrel show character. The laws were existed for about 100 years from the post-Civil War. Now, that takes us to 1960s, okay? And that's why this right here under Anarchy USA is so important. People should really go, you got to devour this page. And I'm going to put a couple more videos up when you have time. Watch those videos. It's so powerful. It's going to put all these puzzle pieces together, okay? Let's see where I'm at here. The black, okay, no. Post-civil, 100 years from the post-Civil War era until 1968 were meant to marginalize African Americans by denying them the right to vote, hold jobs, get an education, or other opportunities. They were the ones suppressing these people, and yet they support this party. They don't understand they're self-destructive. You know, it's self-destructive. By denying them the right to vote, so on and so forth, education or other opportunities. Those who attempted to defy Jim Crow laws often faced arrest, fines, jail sentences, violence, and death. Black codes were strict local and state laws that detailed when, where, and how formerly enslaved people could work and for how much compensation. The codes appeared throughout the South as a legal way to put black citizens into indentured servitude, to take voting rights away, to control where they live and how they traveled, and to seize their children for labor purposes. The legal system was stacked against black citizens, with former Confederate soldiers working as police and judges, making it difficult for African Americans to win court cases, and ensuring that they were subject to black codes. These codes worked in conjunction with labor camps for the incarcerated, where prisoners were treated as enslaved people. Black offenders typically received longer sentences than their white equals, and because of the grueling work, often did not live out their entire sentences. During the Reconstruction era, local governments, as well as the National Democratic Party and Democrat President Andrew Jackson, thwarted efforts to help black Americans move forward. Violence was on the rise, making danger a regular aspect of African American life. Black schools were vandalized and destroyed, and bands of violence, white people attacked, tortured and lynched black citizens in the night. Families were attacked and forced off their land all across the South. The most ruthless organization of the Jim Crow era, the Ku Klux Klan, was born in 1865, another democratic institution. Remember, the purpose of the Democratic Party is to create as much chaos as they can, because they're working hand in hand with the other minions of the New World Order, that being the bar attorneys. One working on the judicial system, and the other one working on our political system. Totally destroyed our whole system. Well, actually, it's all there, but in the minds of the people, it's been destroyed. They don't know. They don't understand. They don't know how to get out of this. They don't know how to take it back. Again, purpose of National Liberty Alliance. The most ruthless organization of the Jim Crow era, the Ku Klux Klan, was born in 1865 in Pulaski, Tennessee, as a private club for Confederate veterans. The KKK grew into a secret society terrorizing black communities and seeping through white Southern culture, with members at the highest level of government and in the lowest echelons of criminal back alleys. At the start of the 1880s, big cities in the South were not wholly beholden to Jim Crow laws, and black Americans found more freedom in them. This led to substantial black populations moving to the cities. And as the decades progressed, white city dwellers demanded more laws to limit opportunities for black Americans. Jim Crow laws soon spread around the country with even more force than previously. Public parks were forbidden for African Americans to enter, and theaters and restaurants were segregated. As long as black Americans continue to maintain a victim mentality, they will continue to believe themselves suppressed, because reality is as one perceives it. Black Americans need to realize that it's the Democratic Party that maintained this destructive mentality, and today it is the Trump-led Republican Party that desires the liberation of black Americans. Black Americans need only to look at other blacks from many countries that have migrated to the United States in pursuit of happiness, and do not see themselves as suppressed, because they simply do not perceive themselves as victims. They believe themselves liberated by the Constitution and seized the opportunity of a better life than from where they fled. This should serve as comfort and relief from victimhood, because it proves that today opportunity and liberty is a state of mind and achieved by anyone who pursues it. Most people, white, black, or whatever, must struggle in their pursuit of happiness, suffering many obstacles and setbacks. Don't view these as a victim, but as lessons in schools of hard knocks. Of course, there are racists, both black and white and black, amongst us. Let me reread that. Hold on. Of course, there are racists, both white and black, among us. Let that be their problem, not ours. I probably should have put a comma there. Ignore them and move on in your pursuit, and you will find the happiness you pursue. You know, because they have a victim mentality, the problem is every time there is a barrier in front of them, you know, automatically their mind thinks prejudice. But that's not true. There's been 1,000 barriers in my life. I've done a lot of things, and I have to fight tooth and nail to get through system. I had to go through the school of hard knocks. I had to fail and fail and fail, and eventually you make it. Eventually you get through. And, you know, in my beginning, trying to get hired, you know, to do this or to do that, you know, and, you know, I was rejected. Someone else was accepted. If you were black, maybe if you see yourself as a victim, you say, oh, that was all prejudice. Or you wonder if it was. It's in your mind. It's rattling around. It keeps you suppressed. Free yourself. Liberate yourself. Because the example are the black people that come into this country that don't carry that baggage. They don't see themselves in that perspective in that way. And they see the opportunity and the freedom, the opportunity in this country, it's still there. Okay? And they see the opportunity, they seize it, and they become successful very, very quickly, even quicker than many of us that were born in the United States, because they have a different perception of this, of liberty. We don't live our lives looking at the liberty perspective and to make our decisions and going forward and so on. Where the people coming into this country, they've been suppressed and they have that they have liberty that they never had before, and they seize the moment. But hit and miss, the school of hard knocks is for all of us. And if you were rejected for something because of a person that was in a position to reject you, and because it was prejudice, well, maybe so. And I don't know that you would absolutely know that, but why keep suspecting that? Move on and realize we all have to struggle. We all have to do what we have to do to make it through, to seize whatever opportunity we can seize. And I've seized a lot of opportunities in my life, and I've had a lot of different careers in my life, and every one of them was a struggle to get to. It was a simple thing in the beginning, saying that's what I want to do, but then doing it became the hard thing, and I never gave up. Anything I wanted to do, I accomplished. Every single thing that I desired in my life to become or do, I always accomplished, but it took time and a lot of failure, because experience breeds wisdom, comes with experience, so that builds wisdom. You know, taking on the challenges, pursuing what you want for the purpose of happiness, the pursuit of happiness, the pursuit of having money to be able to support yourself, and so on and so forth. That's the pursuit, and it's going to be a struggle for everyone. But that's the problem. They have to realize who the enemy really is. And I'm talking about the minorities. The minorities really need to understand the Republicans don't hold that, most generally anyway. Republican, there's people who are prejudiced that are Republicans. And a lot of people are Republicans' names, and they don't even know why they're Republican. They just vote Republican. Same thing with the Democrats. You know, that's the big problem. But in any event, the Republicans are really their potential salvation, so to speak, politically speaking. Not the Democrats, because the Democrats are there to keep you suppressed, to keep you as a victim, so that you never get up and they continue that black and white fight. Because you see, as you keep your enemies busy, because we're their enemies, as you keep your enemies busy, now you can be doing all the work over here and all the work over there, and nobody sees it because you're too busy fighting with each other. Jew against Christian, black against white, Muslim against Christian, Muslim against the Jew, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Okay? We got to get beyond this and realize what they're doing to us. And I'm telling you, this page right here is the key. Watch this video, because this is the video that's going to lay this out to you, what's really going on right here.
Down here have gotten completely fed up. And you know what they're going to do tonight? They don't care. They're not gonna fight down here no more. You know where they're going? They're after the white people. Now they're after the white people. They're going to congregate. They're going to caravan out in Inglewood, clear Del Rey, and everywhere else the white men.
See, this is a kid here. Some little kid doesn't know nothing from anything. And this is what they do. They get the young, they turn our children against us. Okay? They just turn our children against us. You got to watch these videos. I mean, this is unbelievable here.
You think this is starting sugar honey iced tea?
Okay, so liberals are tolerant until I come here with a different opinion than you guys.
No, I'm okay. I'm actually independent, so I go for both sides. It's okay to have an opinion, but
all
you,
I'm doing is standing
agenda,
here.
And then when people try to argue, like
I'm not doing anything.
There, she tapped your hand and you made a huge deal about it.
I told her not to touch me. You guys are about consent. Liberals are all about consent. I asked her not to touch me.
Okay.
It's not a bad thing.
I'm sure he feels dumb now. Oh, I spoke up for somebody and I'm wrong. So, yeah, okay, let me look at my phone. Nothing's going on my phone.
Okay, I'm not going to play that whole video. That's just a little piece of it. It's powerful. This is a good one, too.
I already know.
And,
rather than deal with...
Here it is. Hold on.
Houston, it almost looked like she's going in and out of taking naps. Man, she does not like standing next to Jesse Lee Peterson while he's answering these questions.
Don't talk to them, and don't believe anything that a liberal has to say.
Let me move on a little bit, because they remove him from the podium.
Evil.
Radical, evil organization. First they came home about that. And rather than...
Right, anyway, I'm not going to play. There is a place where they actually come remove him from the podium. And he's telling the truth. Okay, this guy is telling the truth. That was a little bit of assaulted in that one statement, but everything else, he was telling the truth. And even with that, he was telling the truth, too. But anyway, look at this puts the whole piece together. And to understand the difference, and I mentioned this earlier, this I didn't understand. To understand the difference between communism and socialism has become so clear to me now. And that's been puzzling in my mind for years. And this particular video, which I had seen before, but I missed it. You know, you don't capture all the stuff you listen to all the time. That's why you want to repeat things over and over again to get it. But this particular video lays out that difference. It's really, really a powerful
many of them thing. Seize arms by attacking arsenals. Street fights become frequent. Under the leadership of the Communist Party, the workers organize revolutionary committees to be in command of the uprising. Armed workers seize the principal government offices, invade the residences of the president and his cabinet members, arrest them, declare the old regime abolished, establish that a large segment of land be turned over to the ship was liquidated.
All right, again, I'm not going to go through all that. Now, I got a couple more videos I'm going to stick on here, maybe two or three more. And when you watch all these videos, all the things that is kind of confusing and you're trying to figure out how to really view it and, you know, and understand it, this is going to put everything, these videos are going to put everything in perspective for you. So, so after viewing that, if people, I'd like to hear people's view and thoughts on this, maybe in the next couple of weeks, after viewing these things and seeing once what they might think on what I've said about these things. Okay, let's get back to our Q&A. We're going to go to the next caller. So our next caller is, I guess it was Cynthia before. Thanks, Cynthia. Let's go to Brett. Brett, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hello?
Go ahead, Brett. Got it. What's your state again?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
Yeah. I have a few questions here. I have, one of them is, where and how do I get do a FOIA request?
A FOIA request? You can walk into any government office and ask for a FOIA request application.
Okay, so they...
They have it right there. You walk into the office where you want to get some information. They say, oh, you need a FOIA. Everything's FOIA. Everything. I think I spoke about this last week. Maybe I spoke about it on our law course. But everything is FOIA. You know, things that I got all the time before as a contractor, I don't want to get into the story, but, you know, you just go in, you get the information, you get the paperwork, you get the maps, get everything you need, all the information you want. It's the things that have names in it that need to be redacted potentially before you get it, and that's where you ask for the FOIA. And the purpose of the FOIA, they said it to free up the system, but it really clogged up the system. It's good if they didn't exercise the FOIA for every single thing now. You know, when I went in one time to get a list of the people in my election district to walk as a committee man, they wanted me to fill out a FOIA request. I had to fill out a FOIA request for that list. ridiculous, totally ridiculous. But this is what they've done with it. But a FOIA request is a good thing in certain times. I mean, look, at when there's something in there that's information that shouldn't just flow down to the republic and to the public, maybe some people's names or something, you know, or whatever. Then that FOIA request alerts someone on a higher level that has the ability to look at the paperwork to see if something needs to be redacted, and then go through that process of redacting it, and then they release that information to you. So that's okay for that. But for the simple, obvious things that don't and you'll find that nothing was redacted, there never was a need for a FOIA. But it's just another block. Another thing to block the system, to slow things down, to just give you a hard time. So, but go ahead, back to you.
Say a school, for example, could one walk into a school and request a FOIA application?
Well, what do you want to get from the school? I don't understand. That's a different story because that's not a government agency per se.
Oh, okay. Well, it's just trying to if. Information on like police citation on a student, but school cannot give information. So it's like, how do you go about getting that information?
Yeah, I still don't understand. So they have paper in the school. Who are you approaching? The school board or the school itself, or who are you approaching?
Yeah, school itself.
Okay, going into the school and you're trying to get some reports or some documentations of some papers on something?
Yeah. If there was a report made on a student, and you're trying to get that.
And the report that was made on the student, was that known by the people in general and the name of the people and what's going on? Was it in the news? I mean, what's the deal?
No, it's just that thing when something happens at school, like an injury or if there is a fight or something, and it gets...
And a report is made. So what do you want the report for?
To find out who the other parties are.
You know, are you party to the problem, the situation?
A child is, but...
Your child or someone else's child?
My child.
Okay. Part of the process. You should be able to get anything and everything concerning that situation, and names shouldn't even be redacted from that, and if they refuse to give it to you, it depends on who you're talking to. Are you talking to someone at a desk as you enter into the school, like, the registration office or whatever they would call that?
Principal.
Well, the principal's office, but there's usually someone at a desk at whatever that's they're doing the administration. So have you talked with the principal?
Yeah, principal says can't give out that information.
And this has to do with your child, and they can't give you the information?
Right.
Take them to court. That's your next step. Take them to court. You can't do nothing else other than go to court. That becomes a problem because, you know, there's something that holds you back, and it's called money. Okay, because we have to now dig into your pocket and pull out $300-$400 and start the process. And if you don't know how the process works, you got to go hire a lawyer. It just goes on and on and on. So it becomes too expensive, and they know that, so they don't care. People usually aren't going to go that far. That's why you need to understand what we're doing here and learn what we're doing here, because you can take care of your own business. You know exactly what to do. You know exactly what to file. You know exactly how to write the paper, and you know exactly what you're looking for, and you know exactly where to write the wherefore clause, and you know how to hold these people's feet to the fire in that process. Now, is there an administrative process going on concerning your child, or is there something going on in a courtroom concerning your child?
It's going on. I'm trying to get more information about it because...
But hold on. Is there an administrative process going on concerning... the issue concerning your child? Is there an administrative process? In other words, an administrative process is something where there's an arbitrator involved, a judge of some type. They call them a judge, but they're arbitrators. They're not a judge in the sense of a law judge, but they are, they're making a decision, so they're arbitrating the thing. Is that kind of a process going through, and are they requesting or requiring you and or your child to participate?
They have, and there's been a jurisdictional challenge, and now...
Okay, right there, you just hit the nail on the head. Right now, you can challenge that jurisdiction, take it right into court without spending a penny. But the thing is you have to have someone to write your papers, and that's why this course is... Are you in the course?
I am.
Okay, so you're going to learn about this. But, you know, I can't take you any more than that at this point because you have no place to put the information I got to give you. But
okay.
Once you go through the course, you'll have the framework that I can give you the information, and you'll be able to know what to do with that information and deal with it. But it would take a lesson for me to go through to explain what led up, what the process and the procedure is after, what's going on now, what the future focus is going to be, where you're trying to lead through, what you can do if this happens or what you could do if that happens. You know, again, you have to have a framework and to be able to take this information without me having to have a regular course on all of these different issues to get through it. And so it's difficult to really give a solution to a person that doesn't have the knowledge or any way to relate to what I'm going to give them. You know, and how to do it and work with it, and, you know, just getting confused trying to do whatever you have to do. So is this something that requires something right away because there's a concern?
Well, it's almost like it just fell by the wayside. It's almost like it went away, but I don't want to play that game like, okay, it went away, and then something comes back.
Right, I understand. Okay. Well, look, we're moving into pleading, so we're probably moving into the area where maybe you're able to start moving and doing something. And remember, you can always take time, drag your feet. It'll take 30 days to do this, and it'll take 30 days to do that, and take 30 days to do this. By the time you get to those 30 days, which is really have to have a real knowledge at that point, that's 90 days from now. You can have that knowledge in 90 days if you really buckle down. And speaking of the course, and I've mentioned this before, I mentioned this in the course, and I've probably mentioned it many times inside the course, you will get out of this whatever you put into it. You want to be the best, you can be the best, because it's going to give you all the information. And where we lack, we'll find answers in the future and work together on it. And as I learn new things, I'll be adding things at the bottom of this course, maybe PowerPoint videos. Maybe I'll do a live one and add it to the course. I'll put an alert out, hey, I got something to add to the course, and if you can't make it to this live part of the course, it'll be recorded, it'll be on the bottom, you'll have it. So this course will even grow, okay, and because I don't have all the knowledge. You know, I still have blind spots here or there, but the bottom line, though, is that you have to have the knowledge and you have to be able to deal with the problem. If you keep pushing things off, you know, you can start challenging things eventually, moving things into the court arena, you know, the justice court arena, and move through it slowly, because you'll have the knowledge by the time you get 90 days in. But getting back to, you know, getting out of this, whatever you put into it, if people think they're going to go through this course one time and not do the homework, well, they're only injuring themselves. I mean, we don't have a test at the end of the day to give you a passing or failing mark, because we're not giving anyone any certificate or anything of that nature. We're not a school or anything per se. But this knowledge that you're getting is self-knowledge, and I'm sharing my knowledge, and you get out of it what you want to get out of it. So if you do your homework and you follow the process that I'm telling you, at the end of the day, when we... on a Saturday, and you got a week before the next Saturday comes up for the next lesson, in between that, what are you doing? You got to be reading, and you have to repetitiveness, because as you go over these things over and over again, it sinks into your brain and it glues to you. You know, you get that framework and you get all this information that sticks on you, and when you get, look at, Once you get enough, and you're inside this enough, and really, you know, kind of swimming in it, drinking it down, at some point you'll find yourself talking, and it just spills out of your mouth, because that's how the mind works, that's how the brain works. But it's what you put in is what you can get out. So whatever you want out of this, you can get out of this. So
Got it.
We're so,
the next question is on the site, I don't see the Constitution for my state. Now,
It is up there now. I put all the constitutions up there. Turned out we did have all the Constitution. We were missing, I think, Alabama. Let me go in here. Education starts here, court access in the common law course coming. Now, these two things, I think people can see these, but when you go in, you don't have access. But I'm pretty sure you can't even see them. But anyway, anybody that's in the course is seeing these two tabs. So we're going to go to, what are we looking for? We're looking for the Constitution. So we go to the court access table of contents. Okay, open that up, and let's come down a bit to the Constitutions. Here it is, state constitution. Alabama, I think, is the only one missing. I got 49 of the 50 states.
Oh.
So, now I just put these in today because Jan put it to my attention. Hey, we already got the state constitutions up on our website, and it was up there under education, under law, okay? And under the law, we had it here as the state constitutions. Let me open it up in a new tab. So we already had them up there, right here.
Are those annotated or unannotated?
I don't know. I haven't looked into all of them. I don't know. You'd have to go look and see what's in what for yours. I have not reviewed any of these, I don't know. Only one I've looked into is the New York Constitution, and it's just, that's it, pure per Constitution. But I haven't looked at any of the others.
Okay. And what tab is that under again? I'm sorry.
Okay, well, you're in the course, right?
Right.
Okay, education starts here, court access in the common law course, and again, these two tabs will open up. Are you watching on my desktop?
I am.
Okay, these two tabs, court access, recorded videos, that's the videos that we're recording, okay, and court access table of contents, that's all of the tools you need for court. You know, this would be valuable to you when you're writing your papers, when you're in the courtroom. I'm going to also show you the book that I created for myself that I carry when I go into a courtroom. It's a book that gets me around and, you know, helps me deal with, you know, understanding what's happening. If they come up a word which they don't have, I have a glossary in here. I have footnotes with me. I have my constitutions with me, both U.S. and New York. You need to carry your own constitution. Okay, but anyway, you come down here. As you come down, you can see all this stuff is, you know, all the things you're going to need to write your court cases. Here it is, state constitution. So it's underneath Chapter 1 Essentials. Okay, and here's the state constitutions. Okay, anybody out there can find Alabama, please send it to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. And just write in the subject line, the Alabama Constitution. But it's got to be PDF. Don't send me to a site because it's not PDF and I can't put it into this list. So people want should print out their constitutions and have that in a book, a three-ring binder. I got a two-inch thick three-ring binder that I have all the necessary information that I carry in every court case. I also have another three-ring binder for every case I have, with all of my pleadings and arguments and responses, answers and replies and everything, you know, the court case itself. And we're going to talk about organizing that. There is a, at the bottom, I think it's at the bottom of this area. Let's see, footnotes, pleadings. It's on the bottom. I remember now. It's down by the trials, ready for trial. So you have this book, Trial Notebook, I think that's it. Let me open it up. Yeah, Trial Notebook. This is interesting. I just discovered this right as the course was starting. Someone shared this with me and asked me, am I going to include the Trial Notebook? And I'd never heard of that before, but I've been making my own books anyway, so it's pretty close to what they got, but it's from my mindset. But this helps you to put your trial together. And it sounds kind of complex when you go through this, but it really isn't. What makes it complex is they're really writing things up in such a way to dealing with a complex court case. If you have a complex court case, you really need to put your paperwork together in such a way that you'll be able to retrieve things off the fly in the courtroom. And if you can't do that, you're going to have a problem. Okay? And so creating a proper book gives you a very easy, you know, flip of the thumb through the pages to get to your information you're looking for. And again, we're going to get deep into this kind of thing as we get into the course because, you know, especially when we get down to the trial. When you go into that room in the trial and you have a trial going, and most of our cases are not this big. I mean, you got a murder case, it's something, you know, especially a lot of witnesses and stuff. You have some other big case that's really involved. It's a lot of money and you're getting a lot of battle and it's not a cut and dry case. And, you know, and you got witnesses and all these different pieces of evidence and you got to deal with everything. And you have to know every piece of evidence that they have on the other side. And you have to have a plan on how you're going to destroy that piece of evidence. And whether it's an individual coming up on the stand or whether it's something that is a piece of paper, a documentation of something. There can't be one question unanswered in your mind when you go into that courtroom when it comes to the trial. And the whole thing of the pleadings, the whole process, the procedures that you're going through, the motions going back and forth, all part of the pleadings, the discovery, all of that is to gather the necessary information. And understand this one thing, that anything that is not in those pleadings does not come into that courtroom. If you discover something later and you try to bring it into the courtroom, you have to have a hearing. And in that hearing, you got to show the fact that you didn't know this before and you couldn't have known this before. The other side proves that, hey, you should have known this or you could have known this. That evidence ain't coming in. Okay? So you have to really do your homework and make sure you get all the evidence in you want. And you got to know about the other side. They can't bring in nothing new. So you should know every as a matter of fact, everyone will know who wins the case before you get to trial. Just by looking at all of the facts that you've went through and building other stuff. The problem is a person who should have the winning hand sometimes doesn't have it because they didn't articulate themselves well enough in the courtroom. They didn't show the jury the necessary things. And that's why I say it's important to learn the process of PowerPoint. Because PowerPoint is your most powerful tool. Okay, and it sinks it into the brain, you know, with the juror's brain is what you want to sink it into. So it sinks into their brain because they're seeing it, they're hearing it, and you may be animating it, you know, put some animation in there, which draws the eye to it, and so on and so forth. And you make your point. It's more exciting. It also keeps them awake. You know, you get out there and you go blah 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 blah. After a while, some people fall asleep, especially if it's not interesting. Put on a PowerPoint, it's a whole different story now. You get a little excitement. You keep the people awake. They're seeing it with a little drama, you know. So PowerPoint is very important. It's a tool that definitely people need to learn, especially if you're going to find yourself into a trial. Now, most cases should be able to be won on summary judgment. If you're coming in and you're the plaintiff and you got power, and I'll give you an example. Beat any IRS case that has come in and they've seized your property. You can beat that in the court of law in a nanomoment. It takes a little time to go through the pleadings and go back and forth and your discovery, but at some point, once you get them to admit to one thing and one thing only, that there is no warrant. And when you ask for the warrant, you ask for the warrant in your discovery, it doesn't exist. You ask for the lien in your discovery, doesn't exist. Case is over. Summary judgment. I'm filing for summary judgment. They've admitted to it. It's done. You won. Wherefore clause. Execute it. Take it to the sheriff. Go collect your money. So, anyway, let's go to our next caller, I guess. Anything else, Brent? I'm going to go to the next caller because we got people here and it's getting late.
That would be I just wanted to know if you wanted the annotated or the unannotated Constitution because I had both that I was ready to send in.
Yeah, unannotated. I mean, well, you send me both and let me take a look at both. It's interesting. Maybe we'll start looking for both. Okay? So you might have to send one at a time, and that's fine. Just put one as this and one as that. Just make sure you write down it's the Alabama Constitution.
Well, the one, that one there for Wisconsin, that one.
Oh, Wisconsin. Okay, so we have Wisconsin. Send us the other one if we don't.
Yes.
I'd like to see it. All right, just write that in the subject matter. And send it to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org, and I'll keep an eye out for it.
Got it. Thank you, John.
Okay, thank you. Let's take our next caller. Priscilla, you got the mic. What state you from? Priscilla.
Yes.
You got the mic. What state you from?
South Carolina.
South Carolina. Go ahead.
Got a question. A dog bit one of my tenants, and I'm having to take the tenant to court for the person that lives on my property.
You're breaking up or you're falling away from your mic. Try to get closer.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me get closer.
So you're not on speakerphone, are you?
No.
Okay, all right, go ahead. Okay. Dog bit a tenant. Go ahead.
A dog bit a tenant, and they're Spanish folks that owns the dog, and they're challenging me.
Oh, hold on. So it's not your dog that bit the tenant. Someone else's dog.
Right.
You have a tenant who has a dog, and a tenant was bit. Another tenant was bitten by another tenant's dog. Okay,
Right. So the people are Spanish, and the lawyer, they hired a lawyer.
Oh yeah, they'll sue everybody.
And sent me a paper talking about that they had a right. They have rights, and that. All they have is passports, so I don't even know if they're official documents or anything. Should I say something like that in my court papers, where I file back?
I don't understand what it is saying. What rights are they saying? What are they talking about?
Well, I don't know. He's wrote 40 questions, and they're trick questions.
Oh, yeah. But remember, it's probably one noun, one verb, line by line, very simple sentences. You have to admit or deny.
Right. Agree or whatever, and how would I respond where he put that in there?
Okay, hold on. You admit or deny, okay?
Right.
Now, if you admit something and it looks like it could be damaging and they're just playing games with words, you can respond to expound upon your admitting on that particular item and then move on to the next. And that's exactly how I would win the case. Again, when I moved to discovery, my first paper would ask, for documentation, and I want a copy of the warrant. I want a copy of the lien, and they'll give me a copy of the notice of lien. That's not a lien, so there's no answer at all, and they won't have a warrant because it doesn't exist. Case is over. I file for summary judgment. I win. That's done. It's a no-brainer, and I don't even know how they can even deny that. Because there's no reason to go forward into a trial and spend more time and money when the case is over now. But go ahead. Now, they're asking you about 40 questions. What, give me one or two questions that you're concerned with, if you can.
That his client had the right to have representation. I don't know how to answer that. I don't know.
No knowledge. No. Listen, no knowledge.
Okay.
No knowledge. You don't have to admit. You don't have to deny. You have no knowledge.
No knowledge. Okay.
That's how you answer. Okay. No knowledge. So, there's what other question might you be concerned with? Do you have another one?
It was just something like that. And being they're Spanish and they're not, I don't know if they're here legal or illegal. I don't know none of that.
Hey, that's none of your business anyway, right?
Yeah, right. I didn't know if I need to address that or ask that.
No, you don't pry. You don't know. No knowledge. I have no clue. I don't know what people are thinking. People don't tell me their life stories. What would I know?
Okay.
You don't have to go through that.
Yeah.
No knowledge.
Okay, no knowledge. Okay, next, that's fine with that. Next question was, I thought I heard you talking about how you don't have to pay property tax, and where can I find that information?
Well, again, that's a battle you got to be careful with, and how can I say this? You got to be careful. I don't want people to just not pay property tax because they're going to lose their homes, their property, and everything else if they don't know what they're doing. First of all, take the course. Second of all, start studying this issue. When we get to the other side, you don't have to deal with it because all property belongs to the people. Forget about that third-party BS and making you a tenant instead of the owner of the property. So that's something you're not going to have to worry about soon. So I wouldn't even bother with the battle, and I'd continue to deal with it. And remember, we've been injured, and for every injury, there must be a remedy. We are all of us are casualties of war. and all of these trillions and trillions, these super amounts of trillions. Look, some of these people are worth, you know, like for instance, I heard, trying to think of this clown's name, can't think of the guy's name, he's a super billionaire, he's got $25 billion. The guy who owns Microsoft, he's got $89 billion. This is just one person. We're taking all his money. Okay, we could take every dime, we're taking his company, we're taking everything. Soros is the other guy, $25 billion. You see, these people earned their money by subversion, by taking control of the system and using their money in order to subvert us further and bring us into a communist. They're all guilty of conspiracy, working together to bring us into a communist nation, to change our republic to communism and bring us into subjection, to destroy our country. It's subversion. The penalty for many of them is death, by either firing squad or hanging by the rope.
Some of them,
you know, prison for a period of time, because it depends on issues. So every court case for all is going to be different. But anyway,
okay, all right.
Just think of the money involved here. This is just two people with $89 billion and $25 billion. So between the two of them, it's like $110 billion that's going to be taken away from them, okay? Companies and everything, all right? And where's that money going to go? Where is all of that property going to go? Well, it's going to be sold off. It's going to be auctioned off to the people, okay? And that money that's brought in from being auctioned off, where's that going to go? Well, look at, for every injury, there must be a remedy. People will be restored by money, okay? So all of the mortgage you've been paying in, you're going to get restitution on that because it's all been unlawful. A lot of things, different things, the damages and all kinds of things, just in general, just for general sake, because we're all under the suppression, everyone will get a certain amount of money to begin with, and then the higher the injury and all the other problems. I do suspect very strongly that even the dollar, okay, the Federal Reserve dollar, and I don't know this, so don't bank on this. This is just a suspicion that if you have, let's say, $1,000, that you've got in the dollar bill, so you got $100 bills, let's say $10 bills, so it's $1,000. On the other side, well, due to collapse, it's only worth 2 cents right now. Actually, it's like a penny and two-thirds or something like that. That's how bad the dollar is. You know, gold is close to a 2,000. I think it's 1,800 last time I looked, or 1,900. It hit 2,000. It's gone back and forth. But let's say it's 2,000. So if it's $2,000, okay, it takes 20 silver coins to make an ounce of gold. So gold is, so each one of these, you know, you do the division. You can see the value of the dollar. Take $20, and that's how you get back. And you see, to that mathematics alone, brings the dollar value to 2 cents. That's what it's worth compared to what it should be. All right. So now everything collapse happens. We go back to real money, and your dollar's only worth 2 cents. Okay. But I have a feeling. I think, and maybe there'll be a cap on this, I don't know, but I have a feeling that whatever cash you hold, you'll be able to use, exchange the monopoly money dollar for a true dollar, okay, with its true value, okay, not 2 cent value, but its true value.
Right.
And that means, so you'd have, every dollar would be, what's that? If it's 2 cents, then it's 50 times its amount of power, of spending power, 50 times. So this is the kind of thing that, just looking at logic, common sense, maxims, however, just viewing it with common sense, the government can't keep that money. And remember, President Trump says many times, when someone steals, robs a diamond store and they get caught, they got to give the diamonds back. You don't get
right.
to keep them.
Right.
They go back.
Right.
So the people, look at, I should be a millionaire easily. Easily, okay? But as I progressed in my business and building my business, and everything became more and more expensive, and more, mm-hmm. and the amount of money you can save as you go along becomes less and less and less. And the guys that were successful in my business when I first came in, okay, all of them all of them, I'm talking, you know, we call them the old timers, you know, the guys we kind of learned off of, and the big contractors, all of them were millionaires. All of them had more than one home and indoor pools and not yachts per se, but boats. And I mean, it just had a lot of things, you know, they were rich. And you know, when I came to my time and I became at that level of success, you know, I didn't have anywhere near the kind of money and the things that they had, because everything became so expensive. After all, the dollar became worth 2 cents, you know. But, you know, so we have to be restored. And that's where it's going to go. And if the government were to take it, if the government were to take it and keep it and not give it to the people, that would be unrighteous. That would be unjust. They would be as bad as the people before them. So it's going to happen. And I trust them.
All right, next question. I've read that you can do things administratively without having to go into court. How do you proceed with something like that?
I don't understand what you mean by that.
On paper, where you just have it said it's alienated right to handle things privately, handle any kind of proceedings privately.
Well, sometimes the hearings are required, and you got to go into the court for the hearing. You know, when a debate breaks open, everything should be done paperwork back and forth. When a problem erupts, then you have to go in for a hearing. Then you say, hey, this clown's not obeying the rules or the laws, or not giving me what I'm asking for, or whatever the case may be. And so you file for a hearing, and you go in and you put it before the quote-unquote judge. It should be a magistrate.
I've done that.
Called an arbitrator, really, is what they are. Yeah. And even if it's a judge, he's still an arbitrator. We're in a court of law. But he has to make a decision on what's before him or her. And if they don't make it righteously, you appeal it up the system. It can be problematic if you're going for the big stuff and you're going up against status quo, and they're going to do everything they can to maintain that status quo. So that becomes a problem. It's a struggle. Everything is done on – look, in my thinking, these people just want to waste time and money. Okay, and that's all. These lawyers are taught that. Instead of, let's get down to business. Let's find out who's right and wrong. You know, my opinion to them, I'm here because I know I'm right, and I know that you know you're wrong, and you're just trying to protect me. Why go through all this BS? Let's just settle this problem. They're not going to want to do that. But even with that, they play all the games and tricks and, you know, trying to put smoke into the courtroom, trying to just waste your time and your money. And hopefully, you know, behind some of the minds of some of these lawyers, in my opinion, is they figure, well, this guy doesn't really have money. He's got a lawyer. Let's break him. And we'll keep pull him into court. He'll be spending more money. Look, this is part of their strategy, too. It's just, it really rots. You know, a court case should be, if you really think you're right and I think I'm right, let's just battle this on paper back and forth. And when we come to the point where there's nothing more to say, well, maybe someone will file a summary judgment, and if not, we'll go to trial. You know? And that's it.
Yep. All right. Thank you.
All right. We're going to take our next caller. One question per person, because I'd like to get to everyone if I can. It's 11:30. We used to do 3 hours. I don't mind going a little late tonight, but let's go through this. Okay. Hadasha, aloha.
Xander.
Ben, aloha.
Xander, aloha. Just a quick comment to clarify. Did you have something you wanted to add?
Who, me?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't sure if you were going to say something.
No.
What I just wanted to ask is because earlier the phone scanners were brought up, they will turn the documents into a PDF. Even if you don't have a conversion, you know, way to convert it, you can still select all and just paste it, copy paste it into a Word document.
As long as it's able to be cut and paste. Some of them are, when you do a PDF, it's sealed like a picture itself, and you have to open it up. And some you can run it through. What I used to do is I would take my printer, which has an OCR on it. So I can save it as an OCR. I think that's what it's called, an OCR. But in any event, ocular, whatever. So I would take a copy of something that's a PDF that I couldn't open, and I just run it through on my printer, and then I'd send it back in my printer, and I'd send it back into my computer and save as an OCR, and then I can then cut and paste sentences, paragraphs, and you save yourself from typing, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and maybe...
I know there's a program out there, I'm sure, and I should probably go buy one. But go ahead.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, like, I just got a free scanner, you know, off the App Store, an iPhone, and it just does it. So maybe now they're coming up with, you know, understanding that this is going to be an issue.
It should have. If you can change it into a PDF, you can change it over to OCR, which brings it into the word process. Absolutely. I would imagine that is part of the...
Yeah, and then my question, I've heard you reference the American Book of Jurisprudence a couple times, and I am wondering...
It's American Jurisprudence, yeah.
So technically speaking, my first question is this, they're both on American Book of Jurisprudence. Are the judges as well as the jury supposed to be ruling based on that Book of Jurisprudence?
Judges that make decisions, look, judges don't make decisions up. They have to follow what has already been laid out. And so therefore, you know, they have to, American jurisprudence is their guidelines, their ruler, the way they have to rule. And that's what American jurisprudence is about. But American jurisprudence has been polluted. Okay, they actually have American jurisprudence on different things like tax. Okay, well, it has nothing to do with anything for anybody. Now, American jurisprudence, what that really is really the common law in legislation. In other words, legislators need to be using their common sense too and following American jurisprudence. But of course, the problem is that our legislators don't really write the law. Okay. Bar attorneys write the law for them, and that's the problem. And they don't understand it. They shouldn't be in these positions if they don't understand it. Look, Jefferson made it clear, law should be written in plain language for plain people. It's that simple. You don't have to get any crazy things and play all these games, have to go down a rabbit hole to find this and find that, change the meaning of the word, and so on and so forth. You know, it just goes on and on and on. But we don't have to worry too much about it because all that stuff doesn't apply to us in courts of law. And once that problem is gone and these people are gone, you know, a lot of this stuff's just going to disappear through the Republic Review.
Okay. And then regarding that, under common law, say, for example, if an American was denied due process, since the government is of, by, and for the people.
Yeah, it's time to get a paycheck then, but go ahead.
Right?
Yep, yeah. Absolutely.
So if an American would say denied due process, their inalienable God-given rights, and say a judge was caught doing that and things are working, say, the way they're supposed to, would that also be sedition and treason?
Look, a lot of things are sedition the way these people work. Once they violate your rights in a courtroom, and especially if they know it, and they should know it, after all, they're a judge, and if they don't know it, that's their problem. They're guilty anyway, because they should have known it. So, yeah, it is subversion, ultimately. And they won't call it that. A mistake is one thing, okay, but how do you make a mistake when you deny someone one of their rights, especially a right that's listed very plainly in our Bill of Rights, especially that? How can you defend against that? They can't. Anyway, yeah, there's a paycheck at the end of that one, though.
Yeah, exactly. And, I know right now the way it goes, it's like, we should have cases all over the place of treason, you know, but we don't have any because the whole system is...
The Democrat Party should be convicted of treason, okay? Yeah, you know, and I'm dead serious about this. Think about this. The purpose of the Democratic Party is to turn us into a democracy. A democracy is one step away from an oligarchy, okay? They've already taken control of our legislators. They've already so they have total control over them now. They have taken total control of the administration. They've got 100% control there, too, until Trump came in, and he'll get back in, and we'll deal with that, because he was the only one capable of freeing himself from that stuff, because he's a bright individual, and he had all the necessary prerequisitional knowledge in order to be one of the best presidents ever. Not the best, but one of them. In my opinion, the best president ever is Jefferson. Some might say George Washington. He's up there too, of course. But in any event, you know, and they've already taken over 100% control of our courts. So the bar attorneys and the Democratic Party did that. The Democratic Party worked on the destruction of our political process, and the American Bar Association worked on the destruction of our judicial process. And those are the two key things we use to control our government. Government by consent is by controlling those two positions, those points, political and judicial. And so they've destroyed everything. They're guilty. Okay, look at, just think about this, and here's where brain damage comes in. All right, and the people who aren't brain damaged, you know, I shouldn't say brain damaged, but really ignorance, okay? Ignorance comes in. And the people who aren't ignorant have a gun to their head, so they can't really do anything, you know? And you, matter of fact, some of these videos you'll see, you'll realize people can't do anything to stop this communist movement, okay? but the bottom line, though, is that on this coming into the... Well, let me see. I just lost my train of thought here.
So those who do better, they can't do anything?
Oh, okay, yeah. Look, you had in 1938, there was a big movement of the Communist Party in New York City, and they filled up a hall. It was a big entertainment hall down there in Carnegie Hall, I think it was. You know, they filled up the entire hall with people. And it was a regular Nazi-type movement, okay, which was a Communist Party movement. And those people were committing subversion. They were guilty of subversion. You know, there are a couple of statutes that lay out, if you write things, if you teach things, if you get literature and hand out literature, any of those things concerning the destruction of our republic, it's a crime and a penalty. It has a jail sentence there, maybe 4 years or something, whatever it is. Okay. For people under that process. And that's what they do, okay? And the Democrats use their political positions, and some Republicans too, don't get me wrong, because the enemy is in our camp also. And but anyway, you know, all this stuff that they're doing is unlawful, and they could be, they should be convicted in a court of law for subversion to subvert our republic. And there is law that requires a jail sentence for that, and it lays it out very clearly. We've read about it numerous times over the years we've been talking here. So, all right, I got to move to the next person.
Absolutely, thanks so much, John.
All right, LJ, you got the mic. What is your state? And let's keep one question because I'd like to get through this with the other people too. Go ahead,
all right. LJ. Hey, John, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, wow, because last time I tried to get in here, you guys couldn't hear me, and you had to move on. Yes, John, I wanted to first off say that I am in your class, and I am really enjoying it, and the light is starting to come on. It's all starting to come together. So thank you for that and encouraging us that are in that class to study, because it's definitely, I'm starting to see it. Yeah, John, so I got, probably back in about November, I got a speeding ticket, and I got on the call, and you gave me some instructions of what to do, and I just didn't feel confident enough with submitting the paperwork challenging the jurisdiction, so I went ahead and got an extension, and, you know, I thought, okay, I'm going to take this time to, like, study, you know, look up some laws and try to, like, cater this, the, I think it was the challenge the jurisdiction, some document that was on the NLA website. So I, time got away from me, you know, dealing with family. When I got the ticket and when I got the extension for the court, it so happened to fall around the holidays. So I did not get time to study or put this paper together. And in all honesty, they're very corrupt here. I'm from California.
Yeah, they're corrupt everywhere.
Yeah, in my county, they're very corrupt, and I just did not feel confident. I just did not feel confident going in. So I'm pretty sure that these jerks have probably did some kind of frivolous warrant against my arrest. So I wanted to know, did I mess up, and did I put myself in hot water? And if so,
If people don't know what they're doing, then they shouldn't be doing it until they learn how to do it. But if you go into, is this a traffic court?
Yeah.
Code violation? What is it?
A speeding ticket. I was going miles over the freaking.
Look, you know, you can challenge the jurisdiction, and even if you don't know what you're doing, you're not going to get hurt. The worst case scenario is you're going to lose the case. They're going to tell you you got to pay, you pay, and you walk out, and that's that. But now you know, that's the school of hard knocks. You lost on that one, but you learned on that one too. You also got some experience. The best place to get experience, in my opinion, is the traffic courts, okay, because you can learn to make your argument, to write, send your papers in. Challenging jurisdiction is the key point, and so you're learning that, and you do that in a lot of places for a lot of different cases. Any criminal case brought against you by the feds, and into the federal court under USC 18 or 28, you could beat by, they don't have jurisdiction over you. They don't have personam jurisdiction. You could beat that way. Whether you will beat it is another thing because, again, they maintain status quo. But why would they want to arrest you?
Because I got the extension and to go to court. And I just didn't feel confident enough, so I never showed up.
Well, that's a problem. You should always show up. You know, yeah, that's a problem. Why don't you just call in and say, hey, look, you know, I want to change my plea to guilty and pay the fine and see what they say. I mean, look, I doubt they're going to arrest you. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I mean, you know, is there a warrant out for you? Do you know or you don't know?
I don't know. I actually tried to look up the citation on
right.
their
website. You don't know. Here's the thing. Okay. How long ago was it that you were supposed to go and you didn't go?
January 6th.
Okay. Oh, what a date, huh? Okay. So why don't you just call the court up and say, hey, you know, I blew this case out. I forgot all about whatever it is, you know. I don't know what kind of an excuse. You can just say, hey, I had so many problems in my life. I just forgot all about it. Can I come in? And at that point, you know, as long as there's no warrant against you, they'll say, well, okay, look, I'll talk with the judge and we'll send you a letter. I mean, that's what they'll usually do. And then you'll get a letter with a new date. You come in on that date. You can decide what to do then.
Okay, because I really don't want to. I think it's like $500 that they want. That's like a car payment, you know? So
well, show up and tell them that, you know, you had some problems in your life, you know, you put this off and it turned up to be around the holidays and you had problems in your life. You forgot all about it. And now you realize it and you just want to get in there and deal with this problem. So can you give me a court? You're talking to the clerk on the phone. So, and like I said, they'll give you another date. So say, okay, I'll talk to the judge and we'll send you a letter. And the letter will be, hey, your court date is just that and the other thing. Now start boning up and see if you want to fight the case. Challenge jurisdiction or what?
All right. Thank you so much, John.
Okay. Next person, Daniel. What's your state, Daniel? Daniel, you got the mic? What's your state? You got your hand up. Maybe you're muted. No, you're unmuted. Daniel? Last call for Daniel. Okay, going to our next person. Next person is from Florida. What's your first name from Florida? You got the mic.
Hey, John, what's up?
How you doing?
Oh, okay. Dealing with some sinuses. But I wanted to make what I believe is a noble suggestion, actually, to you. And I hope you go for it if you where I'm going. Okay, SDNR made a recent special audio cast. I took time to make answering a bunch of questions about people asking him, well, what can we do in the meantime with all this stuff going on? What can we do to help? Da 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 da. All right. Now, you probably already know, I happen to know, he, besides him having a lot of followers, he's a humble person and he goes on different talk shows, he or her asks. On different, you know, the Rumble channels, okay? So, all right. The way
it's going to be very long because we have
I'm almost done. The way he answered, okay, in a nutshell, all right, I just wish, okay, let me just say this. All right, I highly suggest, if at all possible, that you could contact him to get him to okay, the way he answered, okay, the answer, just the people didn't know, with everything that he was answering, okay, you could do this and do this and do this and that, is if they just knew, you could somehow talk to him and say, look, okay, all the things that you mentioned, the answer to that, and what we can do to help, and da da da, and your answer you gave pertains to the Committee of Safety. If you could get him to announce that,
I don't know what you're talking about. Who announced this?
Oh my God! What I said was real simple.
One of the problems is I'm running late, and my dog wants to go out and trying to settle it. And we're talking.
But this is a very important suggestion. I'm saying that you should do a talk show with him and get him to acknowledge.
A talk show with who?
Oh my God! This is a serious suggestion. If you could get him to acknowledge the Committees of Safety and
who
answer.
Is he? I don't know who he is. I missed that. Who's
but the first person I said was SGNON. That's the first I mentioned his name.
Oh, I have no idea how to get a hold of him. I'd love, if I had the opportunity to have a conversation with him, that would be good, because maybe he would see what we're doing and get the word out to more people. And right now, it is the job of the people that are coming to a knowledge of these things to get it out to more people, people involved, get them at National Liberty Alliance, maybe try to convince them to get into the course, get them involved in what we're doing, creating committees of safety.
If anybody
can make contact with someone for me to have an interview with them, for them to interview me, set that up, get that information to Jan.
Okay.
Connection, get to Jan. Jan will make the final connection and then make an appointment for me to come on to their program, their podcast or whatever, and they can interview me and we get the word out. We have to do this everywhere and anywhere we can. But
I'm trying to tell you, it's an answer to a specific telecast he went on to answer people's questions. And every time he answered, I knew in me the answer is the Committees of Safety, but they didn't know. And I know they'll listen if you can get him to acknowledge because of the followers he has.
I understand what you're saying. The answer, I listen to people all day long, and I said only if they knew about it. Committee of Safety all day long. I listen to things everywhere, here or there, and even Dave. Only if Dave if I can get Dave's attention with the X-22 report, if he understood what we're doing and interview me. I don't know how people get interviewed.
Right.
I've tried to contact him at least a half a dozen times, and no response.
Well, SG is a humble young man, and he goes on different talk shows. I know that.
Huh?
I know SGNR.
All right, well, look, here's the problem. It takes hours of time over the course of time, to try to sit down and say, okay, I'm going to spend half a day making phone calls and searching the Internet and try to find interviews and make the connection. That takes time. I haven't got time for that.
Hold on.
And that's why, we ask for people's help, and we'll be contacting
them. Hold on.
I'm trying to get this out because I'm responding to what you're saying, and I want to take opportunity here to grow with this point that you're bringing up, because it's an excellent point, and you're absolutely right. But we have people that have volunteered their time, and we haven't gotten back to them yet, only because my time has been, it's just everywhere else but there. And I spoke with Jan today, and I told Jan, let's try to get together tomorrow so that we can put together an email to send out to, I think we have 16 people who are volunteering some time, and we want to get an email out to them, get a little conversation going, get them to think about what it is they think that they might want to help us with, and then call a meeting with them and try to make something of it. And one of the things would be is someone to do this kind of thing, and even more than one person, numerous people if possible, to work trying to make contact with individuals where we can get our message out. So that's what we need to do. And if you want to help with that, get a hold of Jan and let her know.
I'm willing to try to make contact with him. All right. But I'm going to send you that particular audio cast I'm referring to. If you listen to it, you'll see why I said that's an excellent opportunity right there.
Absolutely.
The questions that people are asking and how he's answering.
Okay, absolutely. Yeah, send it to me. I'll take a look. And again, if you can make contact with the individual and get an interview, I'm ready.
I'm going to try,
The process works.
I'm going to try to get a connection with him and you.
Okay, the process works. the process works in this way. You know, we have to first let the people know about us. So you make someone has got to make the first contact. Then the contact is made. You give them the information, and you do a follow-up. Okay, once the information, they may go out and take a look at the website. You might turn them to a certain place on the website and see what we're doing. Yeah. Second one is, and then the second contact would be, and you make that appointment at the time, say, hey, look, I'll give you a call in a week after you take a look at this stuff. Then you give them a call back and say, hey, look, so I'm sure you went through that stuff. You're interested in doing an interview with one of the founders. Yeah. And they should say, hopefully, yes. And then that's when you pass them over to Jan. Jan makes the contact, and then Jan will work out all whatever procedures and time and whatever and sort of help me to set up the thing. I'm looking for a paralegal and a secretary. I can't afford them yet, but hopefully someday someone with big dollars, or we hit critical mass and we'll get big dollars that way. But someone would be...
Well, I wish I had the energy and my health was better, because I told you I'm a legal secretary.
Hold on. Maybe someone will realize the value of the work that we're doing here and start supporting and help us to get an office and a paralegal and a secretary working in the office, and my work output would be tenfold of what I put out now if I could get a secretary and a paralegal working with me. But right now, I'm doing it all. I got volunteers. Jan picks up a lot of stuff on my, and other people help me too. I'm not alone. But they're limited in their time, and we need people. Certain knowledge and all of that is necessary. And look at this the other day. Someone mentioned this to me, and I found it as powerful. You know, there's good news and there's bad news here at National Liberty Alliance. The good news is we have volunteers. The bad news is we have volunteers. We have to go professional, and it's a matter of time. Critical mass. Hold on. You know, if you talk or make noise while I'm talking, what happens, it cancels my voice out and people don't get it all. But the thing is that, if we hit critical mass, then we would expect critical mass, even given $5 a month here or there with the active people, we would have some big bucks coming in and we'd be able to make those hiring. And we want to pay some of the people us that are doing the labor work that are volunteers here. We got people making phone calls. Pay them. That gives an incentive, and it also requires them to have some success and really focused in on their job, because now it's become a job, you know. But anyway.
Well, I mentioned, my only problem is serious health problems where I have hardly no energy. Maybe after the med debts come in and I'm better, because I told you I have a degree. I'm a legal secretary. I worked for attorneys for a lot of years. That's why I got my main gist of knowledge of legal writing before I went into common law.
All right. Well, let me just say that we would probably need more than one secretary, and we need they don't necessarily have to be working out of an office, but in the beginning, I need someone right here with me in my town in an office where I can work and come in and instruct, train, teach, and also learn from them, especially if it's a paralegal. I'm sure they have a lot that they can teach me. And so it's got to be, that's what I have to have. But as far as those two individuals, that's one thing. But then you know, a lot more people working in National Liberty Alliance, and it doesn't matter where they're, and we give them jobs, whether it's secretarial work, you know, then maybe the secretary that's working directly under me would work with other people who have secretarial skills and are being paid also, and then they can, you know, meet out the work and then bring the work back in and collectively bring it together and everything brought to my understanding and knowledge and, you know, just work it all out. But we need to get to that point in order to really be successful. And
I'm behind in my own
Hold on. Yeah. Anybody out there with pockets that sees the value of our work, you know, we can use the money. All right. I got to move on, though, because it's coming up on midnight. It is coming up on midnight. Goodness. Okay.
All right. I'll try to.
Good idea. I understand.
If you hear this podcast, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. And again, if you can connect, I'll go talk to anyone. I don't care if it's a small podcast or a large podcast. I'll talk to anyone. As long as I get
when you hear it, you're going to wish to God you could have got in there to interject.
I hear that every day. I wish I was there every day. I listen to people talk, and I say only if I can talk to these people. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll get it out. Look, everything's in God's timing anyway. That's where I settle my mind up. I get uptight sometimes, and I get stressed out a little bit, and I start to put myself under pressure, and then I say, what am I doing this for? You know, I don't have control of this thing. I can only do what I can do. It's up to God to really make things work, because I'm doing God's work. I do believe that.
Well, I know you are. Yes, you are. But I said that only because he has a following, and because they're trying their best to be awake, but yet they still don't have a clue about this thing that we're talking about.
Well, we got to get it out.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
so
well,
they're ready-minded.
Yeah, you're singing to the choir here.
Yeah, they're ready-minded, these people. You know, and he's influential. So, I know if you just had this one, meeting to get him to acknowledge it, it'll go a long way.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, I appreciate it, and you got a good point. Thank you. All right.
Yes, yes. Okay. All right, that's it.
Thank you. Okay, last person on the queue here, Larry from Arizona.
Hey, John, just one other quick thing. This is Larry again. A couple different times the issue of property taxes come up. I am actually studying that right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just give you a brief synopsis of what's property taxable and what is not. Your personal abode, where you live, where you stay out of heat, snow, rain, what have you, that's non-taxable.
Anything you own is non-taxable, period. That's the Constitution.
Well, anyway, if you have a business that you're carrying on commerce, then they have an argument, is what I've seen so far.
Well, no. Well, look, if you're carrying on a business, commercial activity, you have to operate under the rules and regulations created for that commercial activity. And that's that. As a builder, when I was in construction, as a contractor, general contractor, or whatever it was I was doing, okay, there are rules and requirements and codes and regulations that I had to apply in my construction and to build properly. But once you get an architect or an engineer to draw up the prints and they're done and they're approved according to code, then you just go forward and you build it. Now, it needs inspection, of course, and make sure you're operating under code. And there's two ways to go about that in my business. And one is to, a lot of people don't know this, I've done this numerous times where I had towns which were problems where they tried to stick their nose too much into my business and control who I hire and who I don't hire as far as subcontracting out and all that stuff. And I would eliminate it all just by getting an architect, hiring him to do all of the inspections and to make notification to the building inspection. Don't worry about it. We'll take care of it, and we'll certify everything, and at the end of the day, you'll get all the paperwork. That just takes them away from sticking their nose into my business. I would go into, for instance, the city of Poughkeepsie or some other city, and I had to use their people, their electricians, and it's corrupt. The whole thing is corrupt. It brings the prices way up, and, I had a plumber. Electrician or plumber, let me see. Yeah, it was a plumber. I had a plumber coming from another city, and he was doing work for me, and I asked him to do the job in Poughkeepsie, and he wasn't licensed in Poughkeepsie, but he was able to get a bypass because he was licensed in another city, and he was able to get through the system. So he went to the meetings. They had a meeting here with the plumbers, and he gave me a call. He said, John, I was at this meeting last night with all these plumbers, and they were talking about your job, and they were deciding who was going to get the job. And they controlled it. It's all corrupt. And they do it openly, okay? And so anyway, to get rid of all that and get their nose out of my business, that was a process I was able to do and use and utilize. So, but anyway, I don't know if that's helpful or not.
Well, what I'm basically saying is on the my subject was just the property tax.
Right.
That's what I was narrowing on.
Yeah. Well, that's an uphill battle, and.
I've got an 18-page paper and I'm not done yet. So I was just trying to give you a summary, a statement about that.
Tax, I have not really explored it deeper, and I don't want to put my time into it to dig too deep because that's going to disappear soon. So why learn something that you don't need? But in any event, you know, I am under the understanding if you go and you could do this by informing them that your property is private property, and that takes you out of the system as far as taxes concerned, because it's private property. It's not residential. It's not commercial. It's not part of the regulation statutory process they got going, and that pulls you out of the tax system. I understand. And now, it's not, that's, you know, I'm pretty sure that is the case. But in any event, that's an uphill battle too, and it shouldn't be a big thing, you know. But it is, because it's the status quo that they want to maintain.
Absolutely. Well, anyway, I was just trying to put in something I've been working on, that's all.
Okay. All right, yeah, and non-judicial foreclosures, that's the next step that they do once they try to take your property away for taxes. And you can defeat that in a couple of ways, okay? You know, first of all, they don't have personam jurisdiction over you, but lay that aside. It's ultimately a crime. The process of non-judicial foreclosure is a crime itself, and you don't get due process, so you can shut them down because of lack of due process. But again, it's an uphill battle, and you could lose because they want to maintain status quo. So
right.
It's rough. It's tough. So, but
well, thank you for at least making information that's legitimate out there available. There's a lot of other groups out there that say this or that or everything, but when they push comes to shove, you ask them, okay, when are you going to do this? Mum's the word with them.
Well, are you working off the book that we found? Let me see if I can pull this up. It's under law here, forms and process. We put it under that. Land patent PDF. Are you doing a land patent?
I already did that.
Okay, did you work off of this book, or what did you work off of?
There's a gentleman out in Oregon by the name of Ron Gibson who's a lawyer, but he also knows land laws very well.
And does he have a book or something, or does he have some kind of a plan written up?
Yeah, there's two different books that he sells personally. Mm-hmm. They both cost about $50, but they're mm-hmm. very well worth it.
I'm curious, for $50, what size is the book, how thick, how many pages?
They're a lot thinner than yours. Let me just put it that way.
And is it 8.5 by 11?
What?
Is it an 8.5 by 11, a large book like mine, or is it a paperback?
It's a paperback, but it's got like the one I'm looking at right now has 74 pages in it.
Yeah. You see, this is exactly one of the problems. Everybody wants to become a millionaire. Look, they don't realize that they really brought. There's a lot of desire for this kind of a book, and a book like that for 70, he should be selling it for $10, and he'd make up in volume if he realized it. But instead, they're too greedy and they want to make more. You know, I got my book down to the cheapest I possibly can, $39, 39 change. I might say 40 because it's $39.95. I do play that game, I guess. But no, maybe I didn't. Maybe I just made it 39. I don't even remember. But in any event, the book that I'm selling, other people selling the books at this level in law, $100, $150, even more than that. You know, but that's, I'm interested in getting the word out, more important than making the money. And the money, of course, at this point, you know, all this money that comes in from that goes right into NLA. And so I make money every month, and it's a pretty decent amount now. And at some point in time, it's going to go into my pocket because that's my, my labor. But right now, that's my, donation, so to speak, to National Liberty Alliance myself. But nevertheless, people charge way too much money for books. But there are specialty books that they're not going to get sold many because it's just so specialty. Many people aren't interested. So I understand that you might want to charge, you know, a good amount of money for it to sell it. But a book like that, the guy should realize he could make a lot of money just by selling it for $10 a piece. He could make a lot of money off that. You know?
Probably should.
Because people are interested in that information. All he's got to do is find the market, and the market is just getting out there to the Patriots. So, okay, is that it, Larry?
That's it for now, but thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. What's the name of that book before you go?
Oh, okay, hold on a second.
And the author's name.
It's called You Are Not a Slave.
Okay. And is he a bar attorney or just says he's a lawyer or what?
Well, I just been told he's an attorney, but I've met him personally. I don't think he's really a bar attorney. He calls himself a land law researcher is what he calls himself.
Yeah. All right, well, look, I'd be very careful with things. I don't know much about it, so I can't really tell you. I haven't read through it. I do have this book up here, and I haven't been through this book either. Gerard's been tied up with personal problems lately, so you know he hasn't been around much to do. He was supposed to research this book, and he just hasn't had the time. But so I don't know. We did have an individual working on this, and he passed away. I understand he had a lot of stuff, and I understand we even tried to get his work, and the family isn't cooperating. But it is what it is, you know. So.
Mm-hmm.
But all right. Well. Again, I think it's a simpler way of going about it, and I would try that first, and that is to formally address the town that this is not residential property per se. This is private property. I want it listed as private property. You're going to have to take that to court to have it happen. But that would be a quick solution to get through the process, I believe. But again, I don't have a lot of knowledge here, so I don't know. All right, Larry, thank you.
Have a good one.
You too. All right, that brings us to the end of our program. We went kind of long. It's midnight. We used to do 3 hours anyway, but hopefully next week we'll keep it down to the 2 hours. But with that, Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday, and those that are in the course, we'll see you on Saturday. Those that aren't in the course, how come? Why aren't you in the course? Get into the course. It's a great education. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming.